Howdy, folks, and welcome to the July 10th edition of Dead Pit Radio. I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I am Uncle Bill.
Hello, Uncle Bill.
Hi, how are you?
I'm not good.
We've had a very eventful week, not only in the world of horror, but in the entertainment world, Uncle Bill. They just had the big Michael Jackson life, this is your life deal. Funeral, I guess. It was a huge deal yesterday.
Yeah, he was buried in a 24-karat gold coffin.
Right.
Which is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. Don't really know why.
Had a bunch of roses on it and everything. Yeah. Like it was, he won the Kentucky Derby.
You think it's bad around here, people stealing copper? What do you think's going to happen to that damn thing? Somebody will dig him up and dump his ass right out of there. He'll be laying on the side of the road somewhere. Sell that fucking coffin.
Yeah, but I was thinking, though, Uncle Bill, since he has the gold coffin.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, if something was to happen to you and we had to put on a big memorial show for you, first of all, we'd do it in the Mountain Arts Center.
Of course.
We'd have to do it in the Mountain Arts Center. But I would try to get, for you especially, a casket made of shit. I think that that would represent your life.
Didn't you say compressed shit?
Yeah, compressed shit. They can do this, actually, and make it like hard as a brick, you know.
Yeah.
But it would be made of shit, and you would be buried with shit.
It'd be hard for me, though, but if you ever die first, I'm going to have to figure out a way to make a casket made of dick. Because I think that would fully represent you.
Really?
Yeah. So if I don't know how I'm going to do it. I have to dig up a bunch of male corpses and chop their dicks off to make you your dick casket.
But you've already done that, so you can use them to stick up your butt every night. But, yeah, we took a week off, Uncle Bill. It was a relaxing week. We had a week to enjoy ourselves and not really worry about the stresses of a weekly horror talk radio show.
I don't think people realize how stressful this is. I mean, we've got to prepare all of our news. We've got to go on to all the major news sites, and we call a lot of people. We have to call, you know, all of the horror journalists and get the latest scoops before we do this. It's a pretty big deal.
We call them out.
Yeah. So.
So, yeah, but, I mean, it's good to be back. I sort of missed it, actually, as far as actually just doing the show, you know. I mean, there's a lot of prep work involved and trying to get interviews, and you all know the whole Jeremy Dreyfuss situation, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Whatever happened with that anyway? Did she ever email back?
No, and there was a guy on Facebook that emailed her again, and look, I'm just beyond that.
Somebody else on Facebook emailed her?
About the...
What are you doing, stupid?
What's wrong with you? You know that they innovate the whole talk radio, dumbass.
Yeah.
It's just one of those deals where I'm just done with it. I mean, she's never going to do the show, evidently. So, what can you do? You can't. Unfortunately, we can't fucking give her an Indian burn and make her do it.
No. I mean, she's got enough money, she don't have to do it. Nope. She's married to Richard Dreyfuss.
She was.
And Richard Dreyfuss is a pretty big deal. I mean, he was down and out in Beverly Hills.
That's right. He was Mr. Holland's anus, or what is it? Opus? Anus? We're not going to have her on, which is unfortunate. And I think when things like that happen, and it happened to us before with, sort of this way with Richard Brooker, it just leaves you with, like, you don't have, when you think of that particular movie now, you're always going to think of that.
We've had two bad experiences with that Friday 13th Part 3. I mean, if you think about it.
I've had a few, actually. I could go on about Tracy Savage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's quite a few.
Yeah, Tracy Savage one time, when this was in her horror graph days. Actually, I sent her, because I used to make these 8x10 like custom photos out of screenshots from the DVD. And I made her one that had a logo on it, had her name on it. And asked her to sign it. She didn't sign it. I figured, well, maybe it didn't get to her or whatever. But lo and behold, I find out that she's using that picture, the exact picture, like, of course, copies of it, to sell at conventions. And shit like that, I mean, it wouldn't make me that mad if she actually signed my copy. I mean, I would think that was cool then. Didn't even sign my copy, the fucking bitch!
It's hilarious. She kept that like as a master so she can make all the different copies
of it. What the fuck? What a cunt, man. Seriously. Oh, shit, this is awesome. Fuck that guy. You're going to use what I made to make money for yourself, but you wouldn't even send me an autograph back.
Look, man, I mean, that's Tracy Savage. What'd you expect? You didn't really expect her to take a time out of her busy schedule and sign your shit, did you?
Well, no, she's too busy giving the weather at some local Florida TV station or something.
Hi, everybody, it's Tracy Savage. Looks like it's going to rain out there. Bye.
It's going to rain. May I show my boobies? They all sank it out of their meat socks.
Looks like a deflated bicycle tire now. Doesn't it?
Yeah, but things like that leave a bad taste in your mouth, and it happens at conventions as well. I mean, when you meet some of these people, and
you know what else leaves a bad taste in your mouth, don't you?
What?
Ass!
Does it really? That's raunchy. There's no sense in that.
I'm sorry about that.
So,
Oh!
But speaking of Friday the 13th, we do have a very special interview this week. A little bit of a departure from people that we normally get on the show. This guy that we're going to be talking to this week has a cult fan base on the internet. Started making these exact replica hockey masks years ago and is now really getting a big audience. And we're proud to have him on. He's a Southerner, just like us, from North Kakalaki. It's Crash Cunningham.
Yeah, maker of some of the best Friday the 13th masks that you can buy on the market today.
Woo, baby! And he's also involved in the Friday the 13th deluxe editions of 4, 5, and 6, doing a lot of the artwork and stuff with that. So, really interesting conversation, and you need to go over to his website, crasharmy.com. If you want to check out some photos of his work, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it looks exactly like the masks in the movies.
If you're buying a Friday the 13th mask, a Jason mask, and you're not buying it from him, you're making the wrong fucking purchase, sirs or madams.
Indeed. So that's the interview we have planned for you guys. We're doing something pretty cool with the call-ins this week. The first person to call in we'll get to co-host the show with me, Uncle Bill.
That's right. That's kind of a big deal. I mean, here it is, the biggest horror radio talk show known to man in existence. And all you have to do is call and be the first caller, and you will be the co-host of the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really how I got this gig.
Yeah.
I mean, I just called you up one day, and you said, you want to do this? And I said, yeah. So that's it.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, though. We got that going on. We got DVDs. We're going to follow a theme here because we're going to be talking about Friday the 13th DVDs. So it's only fitting that we would have somebody.
It seems like we can't get enough of Friday the 13th.
Well, it seems like DVD companies can't get enough of Friday the 13th either because they release the shit almost every month.
That's true. They're releasing some again. Fap-timber!
Oh, Fap-timber, Daddy!
So we might as well get into the news. We got a few things to talk about this week. First off, The Gate remake. H2O Motion Pictures has finally received financing for the forthcoming remake of The Gate, which will be shot in 3D by actor-turned-director Alex Winter, who you may remember from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and his small role in The Lost Boys. There's no word on any casting yet, but the original film actually starred Stephen Dorff, and it followed three young children who accidentally release a horde of nasty, pint-sized demons from a hole in a suburban backyard. So we're all looking forward to The Gate remake in 3D, Uncle Bill. We'll get to see it in 3D. You know how it is around here. These theaters around here kick ass in 3D.
Yeah, we always get to see everything in 3D around here. I mean, not a day goes by we don't see something in 3D. Actually, like, The Gate, we watched that at the Friday Night Film Festival, and that's a really good movie. I can't imagine how they're going to remake a Gate movie in 3D. But then again, Mighty Bloody Valentine didn't seem like a movie they could remake in 3D either.
But they did.
Thanks, Charles.
They'll have the little minions actually come out of the screen toward you. What sucks, though, about the 3D movies, and I think we were talking to maybe it was Ed Demko or somebody. The problem is, once they hit, you know, DVD or Blu-ray, it's like they're basically worthless because the whole point of those movies was to see them in 3D, and then the 3D versions in the home market suck. They just do. They don't work.
And a lot of times the cinematography and stuff, because it was supposed to be a 3D movie, looks really fucking cheesy or stupid or is out of place if it's when you're not seeing it in 3D.
No doubt.
And there's gags in there that don't make any fucking sense if it's not in 3D. And then there's always like a couple of those in the movie. So I don't know. It's just not the same, I guess.
But Alex Winter, who knows what the fuck he'll be doing. I mean, I didn't know the guy was a director, to be honest with you.
Let's talk about, Wrong Turn 3, Left 4 Dead.
Let's do it.
So apparently,
is Joe Lynch returning?
Oh hell, I don't know. But the High Def Digest, that's the number one site for anything that has to do with high def. I'm sure you know that.
That's our buddy Peter Brackey.
Is reporting.
He didn't email us back after we asked him to do an interview.
They're reporting that Wrong Turn 3 will be arriving on Blu-ray and DVD on October the 20th. So apparently, no extras have been revealed. But the Fox will release previous two films, Wrong Turn and Wrong Turn 2 Dead End, on Blu-ray on September the 15th. And a three-pack will be available as soon as the third film hits stores. So please don't buy the first two. That'd be stupid.
I'm getting a three-pack of the Blu-ray.
There you go. So let's see what we got here. Fonda and her friends go to the woods for a couple of days. Her friends are killed by the wild, now staple mutant killer Three-Finger, who of course cannibalizes them. She's left to fend for herself, but not for long. Meanwhile, some dangerous prisoners are being transferred by Nate Wilson, a prison warden, on his last day before leaving to become a lawyer. During transport, their truck is attacked by Three-Finger, and the prisoners escape. While being chased through the woods, the prisoners come across an abandoned truck filled with bags of money. One by one, Three-Finger kills all the prisoners and everybody else.
I hear that Three-Finger is loved by the lady.
Myth of Three-Finger. He's going to do one of these.
Two in the pink and one in the stink. That's all it needs, baby, with Three-Finger. That's all it needs.
So that's Wrong Turn 3, Left 4 Dead.
Something else really interesting, though, that I was curious what the hell happened to this, because we talked about this movie before the original reimagining of Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween. But Anchor Bay Entertainment will release The Haunted World of El Super Beasto, the feature-length animated film from writer-director Rob Zombie, on DVD and Blu-ray September 22nd. Now, this is a long-time pet project of Zombie, based on his comic book of the same name. The Haunted World of El Super Beasto is a twisted tale of El Super Beasto, voiced by Tom Papa, a former world-class mass wrestler with superhuman strength, who now finds himself in a very ordinary capacity as producer, director, star of Beasto World Enterprises. But when he can, Beasto spends time fighting evil along with his super sexy sister, Susie X, of course, played by Cheryl Moonzomble.
Yeah, it's impossible for her not to be in every film Rob Zombie's got something to do with somehow.
In the spooky monster land, says our hefty hero faces his biggest battle when he struggles to stop the unholy marriage of foul-mouthed stripper Velvet Von Black, played by the voluptuous Rosario Dawson, baby. Ooh, baby.
She's built like a brick shithouse, sir.
And the diabolical Dr. Satan.
Dr. Satan.
Paul Giamatti is actually Dr. Satan. Will all hell break loose, or will our man save the day? The answer can only be found in The Haunted World of El Super Beasto. Also starring in the movie, of course, is Bill Moseley, Sid Haig, Daniel Roebuck, Harlan Williams, Cassandra Peterson,
Elvira,
My heart's on fire, Elvira.
Yeah, she's going to be in it.
Clint Howard is going to be in it. Dee Wallace, Rob Paulson, Tura Santana, and Odile Danny Trejo.
Well, you better not ever let Danny Trejo hear that.
You got stinky pussy.
Danny Trejo will be like, hey, Holmes, I heard you talking shit about me, man.
You don't want to say that shit about Danny Trejo, man. I was in jail for 25 years, eh?
What the fuck? How come everybody turns into an Italian halfway in the middle of hey, Holmes, I'm a fucking Italian.
You want some tequila or something sweet?
I'm sorry.
I love Mexicans, baby. They bring me tortilla chips, if you will. I can't never get enough of them.
My friend tequila.
You want tequila or something sweet? It sounds like, when we go to the Mexican restaurant, we'll just say this. Sounds like some of those guys, they can't speak any other words in English other than that. Like, they've been training to say that. Don tequila, something sweet. They say it the same way every time.
Hey, look, I can't stand by for this racism anymore. That's just wrong.
It's not racism. That's called honesty, brother. One other thing, though, I know everyone is, you know, a lot of people were talking about the Haunted Worldville Super Bisto, but the big project coming up that I have to push because we just got our scripts in recently is, you know, these two movies are going to be competing with one another, I believe, when they come out because they're coming out around the same time. Camp Stick Figure Massacre in 3D, Uncle Bill.
Is that going to be in 3D?
It's going to be in
3D. Are we finally going to be in 3D?
3D. I can talk about some of the cast.
Okay.
If you want to talk about that. And I think you can go to campstickfiguremassacre.com and check out a trailer. You've got an impressive group of people here. Paul Kratka.
The cracker.
The Luthieth. The Luthieth. Felithero, one of the very first interviews, baby.
Mm.
Asshole of the Year, Larry Zerner.
Mm. From the Zerner Law Office. Yeah.
Suzanne Vega, who, that name sounds familiar, but I don't remember.
Wasn't she a musician?
She might be, I don't know.
Yeah, I think she was.
Fred Decker, Uncle Bill. Fred fucking Decker.
Fred the Hammer Decker.
Jim Rose,
really?
Yeah.
I don't know who the hell that is.
Pete Rose's brother.
Is it?
Michael Slipcase Felcher's going to be in it.
The Slipster.
Harry, give me 20. Lehman is going to be in it. The lead character, Sticky Figure, is going to be played by Ray Boucher, Uncle Bill.
Mm.
Another Dead Pit favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And Police Officer 1 is going to be played by Uncle Bill.
Hi.
Police Officer 2 is going to be played by the Creepy Kentuckian.
That's right, folks. We're officially now movie stars.
Yeah, we're going to be in our first animated movie.
We were in Stash. I mean, that was the beginning. We were in Backroads. I guess technically that was the beginning.
Yeah, Backroads was the beginning.
We are certified movie stars now, I'd say.
Yeah, we have our own IMDb pages.
We're kind of a big deal in that regard.
Yeah, so. Camp Stick Figure Massacre in 3D. Check it out. But before we get into some more news, I know we got a bunch of it, Uncle Bill. We do need to take a break.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Because you know what time it is?
Hammer time.
Almost. It's time for Back to the Future.
For 10 years, the secret of Paraboard Cemetery has remained a mystery. Now, three innocent people are about to discover the ultimate evil.
You think that when you die, you go to heaven? You come to us.
This week back in 1988, Universal Studios released Don Coscarelli's Phantasm II in 1,227 theaters. The film opened number 9 at the box office, taking in just $3 million. Phantasm 2 is my personal favorite sequel in the Phantasm franchise, and thank God Universal Studios has finally decided to smarten up and release this on DVD later this year. If you haven't seen it, make sure you pick up the DVD on September 15th.
Tomorrow night, you will enter the childhood home of our most brutal mass murderer.
The home has been rigged up with several cameras, but for the most part, the audience will see...
only what you see.
In 2002, Dimension Films released the final film in the original Halloween franchise. Halloween Resurrection was released in 2094 theaters and debuted number 4, taking in $12.2 million. I've only seen this film one time when it first came out, and I know people are going to say, what the fuck, but I honestly remember liking the film and thinking it wasn't half bad. I don't know, maybe if I went back again and tried to rewatch it, maybe I'd think differently, I don't know, but I still can't picture this being any worse than Rob Zombie's reimagining.
I think we picked the perfect place to live. Just perfect. We have so much unpacking to do.
You're gonna love it up here. We're 2 blocks from the school, which is one of the best in the city.
Ever wonder why ice cubes taste so boring? It's because you make them out of stupid water, you bimbo.
In 2005, Buena Vista released Dark Water, the remake, in 2,657 theaters. The movie opened number 4 at the box office, taking in $9.9 million. I've never seen this film, nor have I seen the original 2002 film. I think when this first came out, I was just so sick of Asian remakes, I didn't even bother seeing it.
Now for our next item, the Royal Crown of Beth Mora, a piece from a long lost culture.
Lost?
Not at all. Very much alive. And I am here to reclaim what is rightfully mine.
And finally, last year, Universal Studios released Guillermo del Toro's Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, in 3,204 theaters. The film opened number 1 at the box office, taking in $34.5 million. I was a big fan of the first Hellboy film. I thought it was great, and I was really looking forward to the sequel. However, after the first viewing, I have to say I was extremely disappointed in part 2. I don't know if it was because I watched it back-to-back with The Dark Knight in theaters. I'm not sure what the deal is. I just didn't think it was as good as the first one, not even close. But I have to say, though, once this was released on Blu-ray, I watched this a few more times. And it's definitely a great film, it's definitely worth checking out, and I have to say too, it's one of the best looking Blu-rays I've ever seen. So if you own a Blu-ray player, and you're looking for something that's, you know, a demo disc, definitely pick up Hellboy 2 The Golden Army, because it looks great. Anyway, I'm Adam Beck, and this has been Back to the Future for July 6th.
Hello, and welcome back to the program. Buddy, seriously, God, you need to stop that right now. That's unprofessional as fuck, so you don't wear it to eat while I'm trying to do this.
Look, buddy, won't you eat my dick?
Oh, it's good. So anyway, let's talk about some Exorcist news. It's been a long time since we heard anything about The Exorcist. But guess what format it's coming on to? You'll never guess.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell, Uncle Bill.
No, your mother sucks cocks on blue right now. Because Warner Home Video has announced The Exorcist, the version you've never seen, will be released on Blu-ray September the 8th.
Neat.
No extras or specs were revealed at this time, but of course it's based on the 1971 novel by William Peter Blatty. And if you don't know what The Exorcist is about, please turn this fucking show off right now, because that's ridiculous if you don't know what that movie's about. But anyway, you can check out the Blu-ray on September the 8th.
You know what's odd, though, is they're just releasing... And why are they still calling it the version you've never seen?
Because technically you've seen it. Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious that almost everybody's seen that by now.
You know what, though, man? Like, the only thing I remember being different about that version was that little fucking spider walk thing she did down the steps.
Yeah, and I think they did some color correction on it, which pissed a lot of people off. But to be honest with you, I can't even remember, like, what the big deal was with that. I know that William Friedkin, that was the way he always wanted the movie to look.
Don't you hate that shit? It's like George Lucas. When people go back, just leave it alone.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's why they can't, with seamless branching, actually give you both versions of the movie, because the original version of the movie didn't look like that. I mean, it didn't have that look to it. But, I mean, at the very least, they could have had a two-disc edition or something like that with both versions of the movie, because, let's face it, man, The Exorcist is one of the top 4 or 5 horror films ever. I don't think anybody would even, yeah, you know.
We should do that, though, on one of our shows. We should go back and redo, like, parts of it. Like, this is the version we always wanted you to hear, this show.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea to do the first show over again.
Here's what we're going to do.
The version of Dead Pitch you thought you'd never hear.
And just leave it alone. You're going to have, some people just have to deal with mistakes that are made, all right? Calm down.
Yeah. So, Something else that's pretty interesting, though, that I want to talk about is Night of Death, Uncle Bill. Synapse Films actually recently released the cover art for its upcoming disc, Night of Death, which is a 1980 French chiller previously announced as Night of the Dead. I wonder why they couldn't get away with that. From director Raphael Delpard. And it actually streets on October the 27th. And Isabelle Gougouy stars as Martina, or Martine, or something, the new nurse at a rural retirement home where the residents' employees are decidedly odd, and some of them begin disappearing, Uncle Bill. Martine soon discovers that there's something evil lurking in the house, and much bloodshed ensues. The DVD will include an anamorphic 166:1 transfer with French Dolby Digital 2.0 and newly translated removable English subtitles. So this is pretty much, as far as the English audience goes, a new film from 1980. I thought that was sort of interesting. Hadn't been seen here before, so definitely look forward to checking that one out from Synapse Films. They always offer interesting titles, to say the least.
Woo, woo, woo! Last story that I've got, though, has to do with a film that I know that you don't even like, which makes me happy. I kind of like the first and the second one, though. There is a Blade prequel, which it says that Stephen Dorff and director Stephen Norrington, who worked together on the first Blade in 98, said that a prequel to the Blade films has been planned. It says Deacon's Story is a new trilogy that the director has created. It will be cool, Dorff says. He goes on to say, the original concept has evolved into a very interesting story, and the linkage to Blade is still big in the equation. Apparently, you can look for the new Blade prequel to begin filming sometime in 2010.
Well, I know Stephen Dorff's excited just to have a job again.
But look, the only thing I remember about Stephen Dorff is when we were talking to Debbie Rochon that time, and she was like going through a list of people she'd interviewed. And she said, like, out of all the people she ever interviewed, he was the biggest asshole or something.
I don't know if she said he was an asshole. He was just out of the interview. Like, he'd been doing a bunch of them that day or something. And that's why I hate doing interviews like that, though. If they're, like, on a little junket, like, a little interview tour or something. Because they're already sick of talking about shit. That's the worst kind of interview to get.
What'd you have for breakfast? That's what I ask them.
What for breakfast, dear? Last thing I've got is news on A Nightmare on Elm Street and possible sequels to the remake or reimagining, whatever you want to call it. Platinum Dunes, they're winding down their first reboot of Nightmare on Elm Street. But the new Freddy Krueger, Jackie Earl Haley, actually said that he signed on to return for more Razor Glove Teen Terrorizing. Says he signed on for two more, so a total of three. Now, Warner Brothers and New Line will release the remake August 16th, 2010. And, of course, the film's premise centers around Freddy Krueger, a serial child murderer, who was killed himself by angry parents, but returns with a burnt face and razor glove to terrorize the teens in their dreams.
Holy shit.
So, yeah. Who knows? I'm sure there'll be sequels to it, though. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, that's the one thing that I always find is a little ironic about all these remakes and stuff. Because the whole point is they're sick of doing the sequels, right? They want to reboot the series.
Right.
Then right after you do the remake or the reboot or whatever you want to call it, you're back to doing sequels. You know, I mean, where the fuck do you go from there?
I have no idea. I don't really understand even the purpose of remaking any of these films except for money, so I'm not really one to talk about why the hell that they would want to say they don't want to do sequels, but then turn around and do sequels to a bunch of fucking remakes. No!
Only the shadow knows.
But anyway, that's
and
all.
And Twitter!
Twitter!
Drizzle! Fuck! Drizzle cry!
You silly bitch!
I want to paint my hair pink!
You got news on screenings, though? I know you do, motherfucker.
Yeah, actually, very cool screening they're doing at the Grindhouse Film Festival. They're actually going to have Ilsa Fest I think it's going to be the 10th and the 11th. So it'll be tonight and Saturday night. Or it goes into Saturday night, I guess. New Beverly Cinema, 7165 Beverly Boulevard, Los Angeles, CA 90036. Ilsa Fest and Don Edmonds Memorial with special guest Diane Thorne, Howard Marr, Marilyn Joy, and Michael Hite, and much more. Starting at 7:30, it's Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS. Then you go on to 10, Ilsa, Harem Keeper of the Oil Sheiks, and midnight, If Bad Knuckles! From 1977.
I've never seen that movie, but I've always heard that it's really good. We need to check it out.
It's directed by the legendary late, great Don Edmonds.
That's true.
Who actually brought us Terror on Tour, which he even admitted was a piece of shit.
Yeah, but which for some reason Dana still thinks is good. I'll never be able to figure that out.
We all have our tastes, I guess.
So DVDs, I've only got a couple for July the 14th. That's next Tuesday. You've got The Haunting in Connecticut on DVD and Blu-ray.
We're going to review it.
I have no idea why. I swear to God, though, it looks like that guy's puking up a fucking grapevine. So, whatever. You've got Wreck, which I know you got as well. We got to review that one, too.
I think we might be reviewing that one next week.
Which, of course, is the precursor to Quarantine with the lovely Jennifer Carpenter.
Yeah, and this one's just a Spaniard film, I think.
Another one that you got, which I was fucking amazed that they even put out, was I Still Know What You Did Last Summer on Blu-ray. It's coming out July the 14th.
Yeah, I think you might see a written review of that sometime soon. You know, that's one, though. It's one of those movies where I saw it one time. It was a huge piece of shit. But for some reason, I guess a good, like, 11 years later after it came out, I wanted to see it again. I don't know why.
The one thing I remember about that movie most of all, though, is it has Jack Black playing like a Rastafarian.
I think that's the only thing anybody can remember from the movie, though. I know they're stuck on some island. Who knows?
It's got Monica in it.
It does, yeah. And she actually killed somebody with a drunk driving charge. I don't know if you heard about that.
Oh, did she?
That ruined her career. Yep.
My shit.
She killed a little girl, actually, a little kid.
I did not know that.
That's Brandy.
But
she lay off the Brandy wine,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, Brandy, that's who it was. Yeah. I don't know, I said Monica. I get all those one-word people confused.
She looked like a Jamaica man.
Anyway, you got also Devil Girl coming out, and that's the only things that I've got for July 14th on DVD. I'm sorry.
So, that's it for the news this week, folks. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Now we might as well get into the interview. It's crash time.
We're going to crash into this fucking interview with the master mask maker himself, Crash Cunningham.
Here on Dead Pirates.
Dot com.
At what point did you take interest in horror films, and more specifically, the Friday the 13th series?
That's a good question. I guess when I was a kid, my dad, he was a big movie fan, still is. He took us, like me and a buddy, he took us to see, you know, quite a few movies back then. I think the first horror movie I think he took us to see, we saw double billing at the drive-in of the original Nightmare on Elm Street and an Italian zombie movie. I can't think of the name of what it was now, but so we saw that at the drive-in. And my dad was pretty good. We were pretty good about knowing, you know, like now, I don't know if I would take, you know, 6-year-old kids to see some horror movies now, but he was pretty good about letting us know what's, you know, what's real and what ain't real. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it started back then. I remember seeing, you know, Halloween at some point, probably not the original, you know, theatrical run, but we did see it at a theater somewhere. Yeah, and it went from there. The first Friday the 13th I saw was on HBO. Mm-hmm. It was part 3. And that's pretty much, that's my favorite Friday the 13th is 3, and that's probably because of that. That was the first one I saw. I remember seeing it. Now, when I say I saw it, you know, I was running back and forth between my bedroom and the living room, you know, watching this, seeing what's going on. And, but yeah, that's the first one I can remember seeing. And, yeah, it pretty much went from there. I mean, growing up, you know, getting older, getting into the teenage years, started getting more into the Jason stuff. The first Friday the 13th I saw at a theater was part 6, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my mom bought, my buddy and myself, she bought our tickets at that time, and, it was on opening night too in our local theater here. I think we were like 12, maybe, and, 13 the most, and, actually we weren't even that, I'd say 12. So, yeah, it was the first Friday the 13th I saw at the theater.
Cool.
Now, was it always Friday the 13th you were interested in, or were you, I mean, you do obviously do the masks and stuff. Were there ever any other franchises that you really, really liked?
Well, you know, being a kid of the 80s, like a lot of us are, you know, I dug Nightmare on Elm Street, of course. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, right there along with the Friday the 13th. Halloween, yeah, you know, I dug the Halloweens back then. But yeah, I wasn't, it was more the mainstream stuff, I guess, I was into back then. You know, we had our local mom and pop video shops that we would go and rent, you know, like on Saturdays we'd rent the original Chainsaw Massacre and, you know, some films like that. The crazy, some of those Herschel Gordon Lewis films.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we saw some of those as a kid, and that was kind of crazy there. But yeah, you know, as far as theater goes, you know, just saw more of the mainstream stuff. And then, you know, some of those, you know, more obscure movies that were out at the theater, like, I had one in mind I was going to say, and I can't, Brain Dead, maybe.
Oh yeah, Peter Jackson. Yeah.
The one with, Eddie Furlong.
Not Pet Sematary.
He did one called Brain Scan, I think. Yeah.
Brain Scan, that's it. Yeah, that's it. You know, things like that. Plus we have a drive-in here too, and which was, you know, good in those days for showing. They're pretty good about when they would have a horror movie, they would pretty much back it up with another horror movie. So I saw a lot of, you know, movies like that. I saw, I think, Jason Takes Manhattan there, billed with The Fly too, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the drive-in was cool. Everybody's got cool drive-in stories.
Oh yeah.
Aside from us, we don't have a drive-in, but. You know.
We had a drive-in, though. I mean,
yeah, I think we were too young to enjoy it.
I went to see Poltergeist 2, I don't remember which one it was, and scared the shit out of me when I was probably about 4 or 5, I'd say.
The first Poltergeist was pretty damn scary to me. That was one of those I caught on HBO as a kid, too. Of course, they played it over and over and over, I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had 2 drive-in theaters here in my town, one on each end of town. They closed one down, and the other one, man, it stayed up till, I would say, probably about 8 years ago.
Wow.
And they pretty much just, it's still there. It looks like kind of a ghost drive-in theater, but yeah, it's been closed for a while now, though.
Tell us a little bit about the evolution of what now is known as the Crash Army, how that all came about. Like,
the Crash Army. Of course, anybody could recognize the logo is a rip off the old Kiss Army logo.
Right.
So I was a kid. Still am a big Kiss fan, so that's kind of where that came along. I don't know. I just wanted like something different. I didn't want like a full-fledged website pertaining to, you know, a hockey mask or hockey mask work. You know, so I just threw something together like that as a. Yeah, you know, just like a little place, like it's more of a blog site is what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, you can just go there and check out, see what I'm doing, what I've done lately, you know, when I update it. I think I kicked that off maybe a year ago. And, I was supposed to have like a kit, you know, you get your own membership kit and all that, but that kind of fell through and I still got to get a few of those out to some people, but.
So, I was thinking, you're pretty much regarded as making, like, the most accurate, you know, Friday the 13th masks that are possible out there. How did the mask making stuff get started?
With me? How did it get started with me?
Yeah.
Or, I used to, I was never, like, particularly on any of the forums, like Night Owl or... You know, some of those, the HMA, some of those bigger, message boards. I visited those, you know, I would, you know, kind of scan through them from time to time. But I did hit up the original Friday the 13th films message boards. And I think I kind of got known for some of the artwork I was doing at the time, you know, posting some artwork there. And I had, you know, prior to that, you had some of the, you know, hockey mask makers that had been around for a couple years, or actually longer than that, that time. And I'd never bought a hockey mask because I never saw one that really got me going. Like, I got to have that mask. That's now some of the Gates of Hell masks, Cropsey masks, those are great. Remember, you know, that was probably the first one I saw that, you know, I thought, that's a pretty cool mask. But, you know, then again, it wasn't, you know, I didn't want to, you know, I'm thinking, well, I could do that myself, you know. So I just never, you know, and I would have done it this way or that way. I never saw a really accurate mask, so, which, you know, didn't bother me because they were great masks at the time. I mean, you had a lot of great mask makers then. And so one day, Bill Eversnick came along and claimed to have the original mold. And so that's a whole other story there. And anyway, I got a blank off of him, and I thought, you know, I'm going to, you know, paint this one up, you know, the best part three I could possibly do at the time. And that's what I did. And I posted pictures, and pretty much from that point on, I got swamped with emails and messages, people asking me to, you know, paint their blank up like that, or, you know, how much would I charge, and, you know, all this stuff. So, yeah, that's pretty much where it took off for me.
Cool. Now, you mentioned that you were doing artwork before. Did you go to art school or anything like that, or is it just something that you picked up over the years?
Yeah, I was, I've always drawn since I was a kid. I guess it, you know, came naturally. But yeah, after high school, I studied art in college, art and graphic design. And, yeah, pretty much, you know, like through high school, I did a lot of, art shows and, you know, had a few like art awards under my belt there, and, did a lot of sculpture, the last 2 years of my high school. Actually did one of the coolest things I've ever done was my senior year in high school. We, three members of my art class, my art instructor at the time, he was a sculptor, so he was kind of passing that along to us. And somehow one of the local colleges in our area commissioned him to do a full-size three-figure sculpture in front of like a teaching center at the school there. So he decided to make it a class project and brought in three of us to work on this thing. So it took us a year and a half to sculpt these three figures. We went through the whole process, building the armature, you know, laying the clay on. And these are life-size figures, so, you know, we had models in there taking measurements and all this stuff. And we actually got to, we completed it after I'd already graduated high school. It was completed. We got to take it downstate in North Carolina, I think Raleigh, to watch it, you know, get bronzed. So they did a bronze version. And hauled it back up here to the mountains in North Carolina, and it was installed, and you know, still there to this day. So it's pretty cool to actually see your name on something like that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Talk about, though, like, how long it takes you to complete a mask. Do you have, like, a waiting list? How many of these do you go through a week or a month?
Oh, man. It varies pretty much like anything else. You'll get, you know, I'll get two or three orders, you know, in a week. You know, it could slow down to, you know, every couple weeks, maybe get an order or two. But then there's times when it's like, everybody wants a mask at the same time. So usually, you know, it's, you know, you want to say you give yourself some time because, of course, you got other things going.
Right.
A few people don't understand that this isn't like a full-time job for a lot of us that do this kind of stuff. You know, we have full-time jobs outside of that.
So,
you know, of course, there's wait times at, you know, 2 weeks to, you know, been longer. Some guys are really patient about waiting, and those are guys that are cool because, you know, they understand you got stuff going on and, you know, they don't mind waiting. Yeah, that's pretty much how that goes.
So you mentioned a little bit earlier that you were able to get, like, an original mold from the a guy
mm-hmm.
for one of the Friday 13. How do you, what kind of process is it to, like, make sure that it's screen accurate? Like, how do you do, like, the all the fine art stuff that goes along with that?
The pretty much the whole process, you'll get, and I get my, we call them blanks, mm-hmm. people in the hockey business refer to them as blanks, and it's just a plastic mask,
right.
You know, it's rough trim, it's not, you know, you have to go through the process of trimming it out, drilling the holes and all that good stuff. And, you know, depending on which version mask you're going to be painting, you know, and fixing up for somebody, you know, you kind of, pretty much the same process, but, you know, you trim it a little differently or, you know, drill the holes different sizes and things like that. And, you know, once that's done, I like my mask. I spend a lot of time on the, you know, before I paint them, I spend a lot of time on the prep work just to get all the edges smooth, the holes smooth, the eye holes smooth. Nothing's rough on the mask.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like holding a mask where the edges are kind of, you know, you wouldn't say sharp, but, you know, you could have sanded them a little more to get it, you know, smoothed out. But, I spend a lot of time on that before I even paint the mask. And, you know, some people don't, unless you're in it and you know, and you've done it yourself, a lot of people don't realize the work that goes into these things even before you start painting them. And, you know, of course, painting them, that's a whole different story, you know. Everybody that does it, you know, they have similar ways of doing it, but everybody has, you know, certain things they do, you know, like their own little tricks and, you know, things like that. But yeah, I say I like doing the prep work on the mask. I like doing that kind of stuff just as much as I like painting them up.
Mm-hmm. And do you like study certain pics from the films, or is it just?
Yeah. By now, I pretty much have every scratch and scuff and you know thing memorized. I could, you know, do a couple of those masks in my sleep probably. But yeah. You know, take screen caps from the movies and, you know, from photographs and, you know, just match them up. And now it's cool now because the high def DVDs and Blu-rays.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
And you can see a lot of stuff going on in there.
Now, do you have any famous customers, people that may have worked on some of these movies that have bought them off of you? Because I know I see a few people at conventions that are selling the masks now. I know Kane Hodder sells a few of them, and I think Danny Steinman was selling some at the Cinema Wasteland show.
Yep. I actually did those that Danny Steinman was selling. Those are some of mine. He, his camp contacted me, I think, during his first convention appearance not too long ago, a couple months ago. And it was kind of a short notice, so I only did like maybe half a dozen
mm-hmm.
masks. Sent those to him, so, and then I sent some to another convention he did. So yeah, Danny Steinman, I've done Richard Brooker, Jason Part 3, he's got a mask I did. I think my favorite, I did a mask for Ted White, and that came about while we were, which I guess we'll get into later, when we were doing the DVDs, when I was working on the DVDs that just came out.
Yeah.
I talked with Ted White, who played Jason in Part 4, and he had, evidently somebody had showed him my stuff before, and, you know, he asked me, you know, he's like, would you mind making a mask for me? I'm like, well, hell no, you know, that's cool. I'll make a mask for you. So I did one and got a nice phone call from, you know, back when he got the mask, and he and I kind of keep in touch from time to time. He's a pretty cool guy. Then I've got, let's see, some of the, I I did a mass for one of the producers of the Friday the 13th shows. I don't know. I know there's a couple more out there that I probably did for that people might recognize. But yeah, I've done so many of these things. This is, you know, it's hard to keep track of stuff like that.
So, tell us about you know, being a big fan of the Friday 13th series. How you got contacted about doing work for the deluxe edition DVDs?
Yeah, that started about ironically enough with a hockey mask. I'd made one of the hockey masks I'd made. Gosh, it was probably one of the first ones I did. Was owned by a guy from he was on the one of the message boards, and he lives in L.A. And they were getting ready to start shooting some of the bonus materials for the Part 4 Deluxe Edition DVD. And you'll see it now, when you watch it now, they went back to the Jarvis house, that location, mm-hmm. and, you know, shot some footage. Well, that was one of the first things they were doing. And they needed a hockey mask, you know, and, you know, the guy says, well, actually, I've got a hockey mask. So he brings along his hockey mask, and the producer saw it, you know, loved it, and he says, well, you got to check out this guy's site. So they showed my site, which actually links to a sister site I have, which has is less mask related and more Friday the 13th related. They saw some of the stuff I did there, and from what they tell me, they said, you know, Daniel Farrens, the producer, he says, you know, we got to have this guy working with us. So from that point, they contacted me and, you know, asked me if I'd be interested in being on the creative team working on these deluxe edition DVDs.
I can imagine. I mean, that's got to be surreal because you were just doing this as a fan on the outside looking in, and now you're sort of, you know.
Yeah, it's it was, you know, because, you know, like most of us, I grew up with this stuff, you know, especially the Friday the 13th films. And, you know, it's cool enough to do, you know, to kind of get recognized within, you know, the little community here that we're all a part of. But, you know, when somebody outside that community that's in the industry, you know, in the business, you know, recognizes you and actually wants you to, you know, work on, you know, in some kind of official capacity, that's great, man. That was, yeah, I'm sure I had Permagrin on for a couple days, you know.
Talking about the movies themselves, though, just as fans, I know you mentioned that you were your favorite was Part 3. Do you have a least favorite of the series?
Yeah. I'm not big on the New Line movies.
Right.
Starting with Jason Goes to Hell there. The original Paramount, the 8 movies they did, I don't know, I can see the good in all of them, but Jason Takes Manhattan, I know it gets a bad rep, but, you know, I don't know. That's probably my least favorite of the Paramount movies. I'm a hardcore original 1 through 4 fan, so those are my core movies there, the first four. The rest I kind of think is, you know, they're fun to watch, you know, and I like them all, you know, but there's more, you know, there's some I like more than others.
Yeah, it seemed like when New Line took the reins over the series, it was like they gave them too big of a budget. I mean, they didn't need, like, the big, glossy, you know, major motion picture look to them, and that's what they seemed to get with, you know, starting with Jason Goes to Hell, you know.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's pretty much what they did there. And, you know, I remember Jason Goes to Hell was kind of, you know, the word about that is it was made, you know, by a fan. So I guess, you know, the director, Adam Marcus, I believe his name is, you know, he was a Friday the 13th fan. And, you know, I remember people saying, you know, talking about it, reading it in Fangoria and, you know, his magazines, how, well, it's in the hands of a fan now. So, but, you know, sometimes it's not always a good thing.
Yeah. Eli Roth is a fan, too.
Yeah. Eli Roth.
Oh,
yeah.
Anyway, I was thinking, though, the Friday the 13th Lux editions of 7 and 8 are getting ready to come out. Do you have any associations with that? Or?
Yeah, that's the same production team that I worked with on 4 through 6 did 7 and 8. Okay. The only thing I have with 7 and 8 is, well, it's kind of strange. The Paramount kind of 4 through 6 were pretty solid DVDs
that
we did. 7 and 8, I don't know what the deal was. Paramount kind of, you know, you don't want to say slacked off because, I don't know, they started showing less interest in 7 and 8 maybe, you know, while we were doing these things. There's some cool stuff that's going to be on there. Definitely, but the only thing I had to do with those, I did a couple of masks. I did a part 7 mask, hockey mask, and a part 8 hockey mask. And I sent those out to L.A., and they were going to use those in some of the interview shoots. Whether they make it on there, I don't know. I know the part 8 mask will. Part 7 mask, I'm not sure if that made it into on-screen interviews, but definitely I think the part 8 mask did. But, yeah, that's the only thing I had going with that. We one of the major thing I worked on the 4 through 6 DVDs was the Crystal Lake Massacres Revisited.
Right, yeah.
And that was actually planned. We had planned that to continue on the Part 7 and Part 8 disc because there we were going to get into the whole, you know, Tina Shepherd storyline and, you know, and then go into, you know, the Manhattan thing. But Paramount pretty much, I think Paramount kind of, you know, cut that there, and they don't want any more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I don't know. But
have you heard anything about the Blu-rays of 4, 5, and 6, if they're planning on doing that? Or?
You know what? We talked about that. I'm sure they are. I haven't heard any official news on it. But, yeah, at the time, you know, there was talk about putting those on Blu-ray. And I'm pretty sure they're going to. There's also talk about a box set later on this year. But the last thing I heard about that, I don't know about now, the last thing I heard about that, Paramount was holding off on a box set.
I wouldn't be surprised, though, if they just released, like, the first three on Blu-ray and then just had the box set. You had to buy the three of them again, you know, just to get the
yeah.
the rest of the movies. That would seem like something they would do. But.
Yep.
Have you ever been contacted about doing special effects in movies, or have you? I'm not sure if you have or not.
I haven't. Either way, yeah, I've not been contacted, or aside from like home movies we made growing up, you know.
Right.
Yeah, no, nothing official or anything like that.
Hmm.
Would you be up for doing stuff like that if somebody?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's yeah, the effects industry, as far as I know, is, you know, there's a whole slew of people out there doing that, and a whole slew of people, you know, in positions like me, you know, in the little independent mask making community and things like that, that, you know, probably, you know, could get a lot of work doing, you know, Hollywood effects and, you know, being out there working in movie stuff, because, you know, some of these guys are great, you know, great sculptors, painters, and, but yeah, I would love to do something like that, you know, mm-hmm. but I guess you'd probably have to start out, you know, on the bottom rung, making mm-hmm. some molds and stuff, you know, to begin with, but, yeah, a lot of guys get started in that young, I think. If you look back at some of the, you know, the bigger names, like, you know, Rick Baker and guys like that, gosh, they've probably been in it since they were like 16, 17, 18, you know.
Oh, yeah.
One question we haven't asked you yet, but what did you think about the remake?
The remake. I was quoted, I made a prediction
okay.
on a couple of the websites, the message boards mm-hmm. before it came out. And my prediction was that Jason himself would be awesome. But the movie itself would kind of suck. I still believe that. I enjoyed the movie. I liked it for what it was. But I think just being able to see Jason on the big screen again in some other form than, you know, being in space or, you know, New York, you know, all that was pretty cool. But, yeah, I really liked Jason in the movie. I just didn't like the movie as a whole.
Yeah. How did the mask stack up to the rest of the masks, I mean, in your opinion?
Gosh, I remember there was a big debate the the first picture when that mask, you know, the first picture of that mask that hit the internet, you heard people yelling everywhere. It was a different mask. It kind of kept the same look, you know, of course, but it was a totally different mask. At first, I didn't really much care for it. And even now, you know, I think it had to grow on me as far as the look because, you know, like I said, I'm kind of traditional. I like the traditionalist, the part three and four mask. But, yeah, I mean, it's an okay mask, I guess, for what it is.
Yeah, it's better than that grocery bag you had over his head for the first half of the movie, whatever it was.
It looked like a mummy or something. I don't know. But I guess that's about it, but I just wanted to get your website out there and talk about how the listeners can go about ordering these masks or contacting you about ordering the masks.
Yeah, cool. They can go to crasharmy.com, and there's some contact info there. My email address is on there. They can contact me for prices or, you know, quotes and questions regarding the mask or, you know, any other thing. I do commissioned artwork as well. So, you know, they can get in contact with me there. There's also a link on that Crash Army site to my sister site, which is the Crystal Lake Variety Store, which I'd pulled from the Part 3 movie, the cafe there at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I modeled this little site after that, and that's it's kind of like an unofficial because I had the site going before we did the bonus material on the DVDs, but it's kind of an unofficial like companion to some of that Crystal Lake Massacres Revisited stuff. There's a lot of basically my approach was the same approach that we did on those DVDs where I would, you know, it was tongue in cheek. I kind of took characters and, you know, scenarios and locations from the movies and made it seem real. So
I was on that portion, so there's like a lot of nods to different things in the Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah, if you're a hardcore fan, you know, you'll probably see some of those and kind of chuckle and get a good laugh. If you're not, you'll probably wonder what the hell's going on. But you know, I thought it was fun to do at the time. You know, it's still fun to do. I keep that site going. I haven't updated it in a while because of the DVD stuff going on. Paramount owns pretty much anything I did on the bonus material. So I've got to be careful what I put up there now.
Baby's getting anxious. The hour's getting late. The night is almost.
Hey, this is Tug Bolt, and you're listening to Dead Pit Radio. Toot, toot.
Howdy, folks, and welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. Big thanks goes out to Crash Cunningham for spending some time with us, talking to us about the master, the man behind the mask himself.
Yeah, we got to say a big thanks to him because that was an awesome interview. Take time out of his busy schedule. And here's the thing people don't realize, and he mentioned this too. The guy's got a job aside from the stuff that he does for the masks and stuff.
He's a big fan of horror in general. And he actually is letting us know that he's going to be at the Fright Night Film Festival possibly coming up in Louisville. I mean, just as a fan walking around. So definitely look forward to possibly meeting him up there and talking horror in person, you know. So, I know it was a little bit of a departure from the stuff we normally do, but that's mainly why we wanted to do it. And the fact that his masks are unreal. I mean, truthfully, I think me and Uncle Bill are both going to get one eventually, hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, we have to wait till this recession dials down a little bit, but after that, I'm definitely picking one up.
Yeah.
I'll pick a couple of them up.
Maybe you could sell, like, one of your 15 guitars that you don't use.
I told you I sold one of them, motherfucker. God.
Well, use that money.
talk to me about guitars. But you got a damn amp down there that you ain't played on in fucking 2 years.
No, it was actually, I played it last year.
Makes me upset even thinking about it. So we're going to do emails?
Let's do some emails, folks, because we do have a bunch of them. And after this next segment here is going to be the fan call-in portion. And we're actually, it's going to be completely random. I have no clue who it could be. It could be Mr. Blonde, who I hope to God. Well, I like Mr. Blonde. He's a nice guy and everything. But for sanity's sake, I hope it isn't him, because I couldn't understand a fucking word the guy said.
It's like Ozzy or something. I mean,
even worse than Ozzy.
Yeah,
that's true. At least Ozzy, you can sort of like halfway tell what he's saying. This guy's like, it's almost like he's saying shit backwards.
It's like some bitch is playing a record and just put like playing it backwards.
Paul is dead.
Paul is dead. Okay. So, yeah. Call in, co-host. You get the idea.
It's going to be an epic show, Uncle Bill.
I can only imagine. So, let's go ahead and get started with the emails. First up from Black Label, it says, "Hey, CK and Uncle Bill, I'm a huge metal fan, and I know you gals are as well. What are your top three metal riffs of all time?"
Oh, shit.
Jesus.
Top three metal riffs. See, here's the thing with me and metal riffs, though. To me, the biggest or best riffs are ones that you instantly know what they are as soon as they're being played. So, I don't know. I think most of mine would be from Tony Iommi.
That's what I was thinking, too. But I got a couple I can think of.
I'm thinking, like, I really love Snowblind, the riff in Snowblind. What else? Of course, Iron Man. Everybody knows Iron Man.
Yeah.
Then I guess you could give AC/DC some credit, too. I mean, they're pretty good riffsters.
I'm going to put Back in Black in there. I'm going to put Walk by Pantera in there. Even though some bitch only uses like two notes, but you still automatically know what that song is when you hear it. And I'd probably say, like, I always thought the riff in Heaven and Hell was one of the best riffs ever, too.
Yeah, that was a good one, too. And also, like, I know you're not a big fan of the song just because it's overplayed, is Shook Me All Night Long, AC/DC. I think everybody knows that. And Highway to Hell is another one everybody knows. Yeah, I mean, as far as the big riff bands go, I'd say AC/DC and Black Sabbath would be two of the biggest ones, I would think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't think of anybody that's that instantly recognizable what the song is.
Yeah.
Aside from those bands.
So that's a pretty good question. Wasn't really related to horror, but whatever. A question from our buddy JHuddy666. I thought he'd left us, Uncle Bill.
Apparently not, sir.
Says, "Hey, CK and UB, I was wondering what you guys think of the movie Dark City and the flick Delta Force. The theme in Delta Force is so cheesy, it's great. I also picked up the Dusty Rhodes Story 3-disc DVD at Walmart for $4. The best deal I've ever got on a DVD.
Yeah.
I'd love to find that for $4. I'd buy a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen Dark City. Did we ever? I don't think we ever watched Dark City.
I actually did watch it. I don't like it. I thought I would like it. Of course, I only watched it once a few years ago on a video. But it's just, I don't know, man. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. It's one of those abstract movies. It's a little, well, not completely abstract, but too abstract for me, I would say.
Delta Force, though, on the other hand, is a film that I used to watch fucking incessantly when I was a kid. And I, so much to the point where, like, they have these little, like, go-kart things in them that have sidecars on them that they use when they, you know, when they go over and invade the terrorists and all this stuff. And I used to have a little big go-kart, and I would imagine that I had, like, a machine gun nest on my go-kart, and I would, like, drive around acting like that. Delta Force, to me, is, like, one of the best action films ever made, even though, like, when we went back and watched it again recently, it's longer than hell.
Yeah. See, I don't... That's the thing. When we went back and watched it again, it wasn't nearly as good as I remember it being when I was a kid, I didn't think. I thought it was way too long. And the movie I was actually thinking that was going to be, I believe, was Missing in Action.
Yeah.
I was getting those two confused.
I
Missing
do remember
in Action
the theme,
is a lot better
though.
Movie, I think, though.
I remember the theme being on him. It's like something like,
to me, though, I mean, Chuck Norris, he has a couple of really great movies that a lot of people don't talk about. One of them is definitely Silent Rage.
Yes, which, awesome film.
I think
Top Dog is another one.
Yeah, that's the other one I was going to talk about. Actually, was Top Dog, where it's amazing because the dog outacts Chuck Norris in the movie, and it's true. He really does.
I also always like Sidekicks, not a lot of people talk about that. It's not out on DVD, I don't think.
The late Jonathan Brandis was in that, I think.
And Invasion USA, those are my favorites.
Something else that was great about Silent Rage is, like, Chuck Norris is one of the movies where Chuck Norris actually, like, I don't know, tries to act like he wants in a relationship with a woman and tries to talk, you know, sweet to her and stuff. And it's just fucking great.
Yeah.
It's just awesome at how shitty it is. Like, you need to go back.
One of the worst acting performances ever.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Wolfman41 writes in, says, my wife and I will be attending our first ever horror convention this year, the Scarefest in Lexington. Since you guys are old pros at the convention circuit, I was hoping you could fill me in on what to expect. Unfortunately, I can only afford to go on Saturday, so I need to cram in as much as possible. I'm really hoping to see Cry, having heard so much about it on your show. So he wants to know what to expect from, one. I guess he's saying one day. He's only going to be able to go on Saturday.
Well, Saturday's the best day to go. I mean, I don't know what the schedule is like. The only thing for sure about Scarefest is...
Nothing's for sure. No, seriously. Here's what you can expect as far as, like, conventions go in general, and the Scarefest in particular, is that with Scarefest, there's not... I don't think there was any screenings, was there, as far as movie screenings?
There were a couple, but, I mean, they don't really focus a lot on films like the Friday Night Film Fest does. It's not really a film festival. It's just more of a big gathering of horror fans.
Yeah, but you can definitely look forward to some Q&As because they had a ton of those. They'll probably be Saturday will probably be the best day for the Q&As. Anything that's there, anybody that's there, you can expect some sort of Q&A about the films that they've been in. I don't think the guest list is finalized yet, so who knows what might happen between now and then. But you can expect a ton of vendors selling everything from T-shirts to bootleg DVDs to regular DVDs to busts and masks. You can expect like a bunch of people from paranormal that are going to be there. You can expect horror. I mean, that's...
Yeah, the Scarefest was the first year, and I don't know if it will... I'm guessing it'll be even bigger this year. Was an amazing show. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I never, ever would have imagined that there would have been that many people there.
Great location where they've got the show at, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you can expect to pay about $20 to $25 per autograph, so I think you should be aware of that.
Yeah. Although there could be a few that will surprise you. I know PJ Souls was like $10, which was nice and refreshing. But, yeah, I mean, it's a fun time at these conventions. You just got to really spend your money wisely, you know. So, we got something here. And, Uncle Bill, I want to educate you for once, motherfucker.
Okay.
The guy's name isn't Pizzowell. It's Pizzal. You should know it by now, motherfucker. He says it in every one of his fucking videos.
You mean like ShamWow? Same thing?
Yeah. Except our good buddy Pizzal hasn't got arrested for beating the shit out of a hooker yet.
Not yet. It's coming.
Yeah, maybe if he comes to Friday night, he might find a hooker to beat the fuck out of. You know, he can channel some David Naughton fury or something. I don't know.
David Naughton's going to turn into a werewolf on us now.
He says, this is a good buddy, Piz. He says, I was wondering, since you're both big-time KFC aficionados, have you ever been to the first KFC in Corbin, Kentucky, the Sanders Cafe? If not, you both should make the pilgrimage. I'm buying. Well, piss out, by God, if you'll meet us there and buy our food, we'll fucking film it.
I guess.
Well, the hell is Corbin at? I've heard of it. I've never been there.
I've never been out to Corbin either, so I don't really know. I've never been there, though. Have you ever been to the Sanders Cafe?
I was, I think, in Louisville, Colonel Sanders' wife, up until, like, she lived to be older than dog shit. Like, I don't know when she died. She has a place that we ate one time that was really good.
Is that Minnie Sanders?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Mick Wagoner writes in and says, the talk about Dark City above made me think of a question. What movie has been most improved by the release of a special edition or extended edition or director's cut or whatever? Dark City special edition release is pretty famous since it reversed some really stupid choices made by the producers in the theatrical cut. But can you think of other movies that were awful or just okay, but when you saw them uncut, they turned out to be pretty good?
One that pops into my mind is the My Bloody Valentine.
God, yes. That was a major improvement.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the first ones I could think of where it was like, wow, shit, that's fucking awesome. They added that stuff back in it. And I was hoping, you know, we would get that with these new Friday the 13th a little bit more, but I don't know what it is. We'll get into that a little bit later when we review the movies. You know, they had footage from My Bloody Valentine, which was an offshoot of the Friday the 13th series, which was Paramount's big deal, but they don't have saved footage of those, the original negatives for those movies. I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with that. But the My Bloody Valentine's definitely, as far as horror goes, is one of the, definitely one of the best.
One of the only ones I could think of besides that, that really, it really made a difference to me when I watched it about it being unrated or, you know, uncut, was Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. For kind of the same reasons, because even though that film was like heavily neutered by producers and stuff, like the version, the rated version of that film is infinitely shittier than the unrated version.
Well, I've noticed a lot of the times though with these DVDs and stuff, they'll promise stuff like, oh, this is the extreme edition, this is brutal. Like the new Friday the 13th DVD, what, the final cut?
Yeah.
They didn't add nothing like gore wise back into it at all. Like it was all, oh, there's that little baby Jason, looks like shit.
Yeah, that was kind of silly. Well, I mean, if you want to talk about special edition DVDs, there's been some really great ones, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre one and Dawn of the Dead Ultimate Edition, but I don't know if that's exactly what you're talking about. I think you just mean, like,
stuff that was added back in that you didn't see before.
Star Wars, that was fucking awesome. When they added that CGI job of the HUD, I about shit myself.
Did you ever go back, though, I think it's on YouTube, and look at the original special edition that they released in 97 in theaters? Of scenes they added in and stuff. It looks so hilariously bad now. Like, there's a scene with Jabba the Hutt.
Where he's walking with Han Solo?
Yeah. And it looks like a fucking Super Nintendo game or something. Like, I don't know what the hell the deal was with that. But, anyway. Bully Blinder, baby, Thev. Would you guys watch a slasher film about an evil bowler that killed people with bowling equipment and spouted off bowling-related one-liners? I think that, movie exists.
We did, yeah. It's called Gutter Balls, I think.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. I actually like it. I thought it was pretty good.
I don't think he spouted off one-liners, but I'm maybe wrong.
That's about as close as you're going to get, though.
Okay, let's see. Cthulhu for You says, I really liked your TV horror episode. You mentioned that you thought Twilight Zone was the first horror anthology show. There's actually a really great one from a few years before called Thriller. It was hosted by Boris Karloff. It was pretty graphic for the time and had some scary episodes. There's another show from the UK from the 1970s with the same name, but I never saw that one. So he also says, Michael Jackson, I was watching TV between jobs last week on the day he died, and they were showing pictures of his career while talking about his passing. They kept showing pictures of him as a zombie in the Thriller video. That was so wrong and so funny. That's more of like a
statement.
That's
shameful. Don't you talk about the king of pop that way, baby.
Yeah. I guess they could technically do like the next Thriller video pretty soon if they wanted to.
That's shame. They did have John Landis on, I think it was ABC interviewing him or something about, because he directed Thriller, you know?
Yeah.
So he's got a lot of airplay about that. He probably won't do any more conventions now. But I'm pretty big deal. I was on fucking ABC now. Shut up.
I did a documentary about Don Rickles.
October's Oblivion.
Hmm.
Has either one of you guys ever crawled in the bed with a copperhead?
I like that look.
Buddy, what the fuck kind of question's that?
No, I don't think I've ever crawled in. You've crawled in the bed with all kinds of snakes before.
You've crawled in the bed with a dickhead. You're like, oh, God. Get my butt, dickhead.
Yeah. The old one-eyed snake, yeah, for you. Let's see. What up, guys? This is from Hara AZ. He says, I've been really busy with my band, but still managed to check out the show every week. I love the video you two did for the posters. Great wrestling montage. Looking forward to part two.
Well, part two is up and part three is up. Everybody's waiting on part four now.
Yeah, I know.
Where's part four at?
I don't know. He says, I saw Drag Me to Hell and it really got me excited. I thought for sure I would hear more buzz about it. I'm going to go see it again tonight. Why do you think when an original horror movie such as Drag Me to Hell comes out, there hasn't been more of a wide general public reaction to it? Seems like mostly everyone that has seen it was a horror regular and not the mainstream audience that goes to see Saw. Keep it real, and I'll keep listening, Horror AZ. Well, basically because the people that go to see Saw are just like a bunch of fucking teenagers and tweens and stuff like that. And
I mean,
they don't
go
see stuff like that.
And this is why Drag Me to Hell didn't make a lot of money. And there's somebody trying to say it did make a lot of money. It made its money back. Look, motherfucker, the budget for a film, a lot of people get that mixed up, okay? The budget for a film is the production budget the movie actually costs to make the fucking movie, okay? You're not talking about the millions of dollars it takes for promotion and, you know, putting the prints together and stuff like that. There's a lot of money involved in this, and that movie was a fucking flop. I don't give a shit what anybody says. I liked the movie. It was a flop. Don't try to say it wasn't. The reason it didn't make money is it didn't draw anybody else other than the horror audience, and that's why that's the key. I mean, that's what the Saw movies do, because all the people that are going to see Saw movies aren't horror fans. It's just that time of year. You know, it's October. It must be Saw. You know, that's why it's the slogan. That's everybody's, like,
that's
it's a tradition. It really is. It's become a tradition. And that's why they're successful. I mean, it's people are used to doing that now. And all those movies, as long as Lionsgate makes them, they're going to keep making money. I am sure 5 or 10 years from now, we'll still be seeing these Saw movies. They will not remake the shit. They'll be making them every goddamn year because it's the one true thing from Lionsgate. It's the one thing they're guaranteed to make money with.
Another thing about that movie, too, is that style of horror film and that concept is completely dead. Like, Saw and all that torture stuff still goes on and on and on. But the kind of movie that Sam Raimi makes is just not, it doesn't appeal to the younger audience. They don't know what the hell that is. It just doesn't work.
That's true. But we appreciate everybody for writing the fan questions in and all that. And be sure to do it on the Dead Pit Message Board if you want to write a question in. Post your questions here or whatever it is. I don't even know. But we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I'm going to pick somebody to co-host the show with me, Uncle Bill.
Oh, shit.
I don't know who it'll be. Uncle Bill's actually going to have to go take a massive shit for about half an hour. And he will be back. So we're going to do that after this break.
You're on Dead Pit.
.com.
Hey everybody, this is Derek Mears, the new Jason from Friday the 13th, and you're listening to DeadPit.com.
George Romero brings back the dead. Night of the living dead has ended. Dawn of the dead is here.
They must be destroyed on sight!
We have spawned our own savagery. Soon, it will consume us all. Dawn of the Dead contains scenes of violence that may be considered shocky. No one under 17 will be admitted. From United Film Distributing Company.
Hello, folks, and welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. I'm the Creepy Kentuckian here, and we're going to do something that's never, ever been done before. It's right now 8 o'clock, and, of course, people are lighting up the phone lines over here, and the first person, I'm getting ready to pick somebody, is going to be the co-host this week on the show. So let's go ahead and pick it. Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Hello, this is Hydroponics.
Oh, shit.
What's going on?
You know, actually, me
What's
and Uncle...
up, DK?
You're What's actually that? The you're the very first caller. You know what that means,
really?
Don't you?
Nice. What time is it? Fuck. Nice. 8:01.
Indeed. So what's been going on with you?
Shit. Just been working. Working and fucking watching stupid YouTube videos and putting around the computer.
So, since you're going to be the guest co-host this week, do you want to dedicate this show to anybody in particular or anything like that?
Let's dedicate this show to Billy Mays.
Okay.
Rest in peace, Billy Mays.
Indeed. You know, I was wondering, though, if the guy was ever going to sell his, whatever he's using to color his fucking hair, you know?
That shit was fucking like, bam! This is there. That's the most fucking perfect beard ever.
The Sham Wow guy.
He hit up his eyebrows even. Fucking.
The Sham Wow guy, he fucking, he got in trouble for beating up a hooker or something, didn't he?
Yeah, he likes biting tongues with other hookers and shit like that, I guess.
I mean, have you been watching any horror lately? Anything interest you on DVD or anything like that?
Actually, I bought some from Big Lots the other day, but before that, I didn't buy much horror at all. I hadn't bought any since probably the first 3 Friday the 13th that came out.
Cool. Well, I mean,
I bought those on opening day, and I fucking didn't even open them, so I was like, fuck, they're still sealed. I'm like, Christ, I'm not going to buy the other ones.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to wait on watch it. I want to wait on the Blu-rays of those. I don't think I want to bother with those ones.
Yeah.
But you up for co-hosting, I guess? I don't know if you knew about the we were talking about.
I'll harass random callers, why not?
Yeah, sure. There's actually a lot of people calling in, so let's see who we got here.
All right.
Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio with the Creepy Kentuckian and Hydroponic. Who's this?
It's the Changeling. Hydro, you fucker, you beat me to it. I was trying to call in constantly.
What's up, Fuzzball?
Fuzzball indeed. What's going on, guys?
Shit. I just watched your new video you posted.
What'd you think of it?
It was pretty good. I love your posters, man. Look.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I got nothing to talk about. I was trying to sneak my way in to be the co-host, but I saw my Bloody Valentine remake last night, and I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, you liked it? Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know what all the... I know Uncle Bill didn't... He wasn't a big fan of it, but, I mean, what do you expect, man? I mean, it's fucking My Bloody Valentine. I mean, to me, it stayed pretty true to the original movie, aside from the fact that it didn't take place in your homeland of Canada.
Oh, Canada! Yeah, I know there was no moosehead beer going around or anything. I kind of missed that part of it, but
not your buddy guy.
Yeah, well, you're not my buddy, buddy. But actually, I hated the ending though. I thought it was terrible. But
well, at least it leaves it open for a sequel. At least I don't know. Maybe if we want that, who the fuck knows? But
yeah,
at least they left it open, you know, so it could be realistic.
Well, I thought the 3D actually transferred pretty good. I have the Blu-ray. I don't know. I thought it was pretty decent, actually.
That's what I hear. The Blu-ray works a lot better in 3D than the regular DVD.
I know that was definitely the case with Friday the 13th in 3D, but, I mean, it didn't work that great, you know, to me, but, I mean, it worked a little bit better. But I can only imagine, like, I guess a new movie, it would definitely work better, you know, than something that's like 25
years old. To be
honest,
I've never watched 3D DVD. I've got like the Nightmare on Elm Street one and shit, you know, on the box set, but I've never actually popped it in and checked it out.
No,
but
don't bother
DVD
watching
it. On
that.
Video shit sucks, so I'm like, fuck it.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street was, I guess, one of the very first DVDs that had the 3D option. I guess it was part 6.
Yeah, Freddy's dead.
And, man, that didn't work at all.
Oh, shit. It was just fucking terrible. And it's only for about, what, maybe 5 to 10 minutes, but, you know, you start getting a fucking headache and stuff. It's just like, oh, I'm going to just turn this off now. Or just take the glasses off, I mean.
Yeah, because believe it or not, I mean, back when that came out in like 99, I think, when DVDs were really, really new. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting the box set just for that, because I actually, a year before I even had a DVD player, I got the VHS box set, and I really liked it. It's pretty much the same thing as far as all the extras and stuff. They just put them at the end of the movie. But the one thing the DVD had was the 3D that I wanted to check out. And that was mainly the reason I bought the DVD version, because at that point in time, you know, I was still buying VHSs as well, new VHSs.
Also, you were like an Uncle Bill to Blu-ray, basically.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, man. You know, the big difference going from VHS to that.
Yeah, big one. But, I haven't gotten the Part 3, Friday the 13th Part 3 Blu-ray yet. I have the DVD. I don't know, I wasn't too impressed with the 3D on that, but you think you're saying the Blu-ray for Part 3 is better?
It is better, but I don't want to say it's not a drastic improvement or anything.
I heard that all 3D is better on Blu-ray. I don't know if it's the frame rate or what the fuck's going on, but yeah.
Well, the main reason, I think it's called Real 3D or something like that. They can't.
That shit is different from the theaters, though. I mean, they can't reproduce it in the home, basically, because mm-hmm. they have, like, a split screen and shit's going on at different times, you know? So.
That's true.
Right. I mean, there is a system out that sort of does that, but I don't think it's the same.
Yeah, they're electronic glasses, right?
Yeah. But the thing is, the glasses are so expensive, they can't really, you know, they can't really include them with some, you know, a movie for free or anything.
Now, do those glasses make every movie 3D, or do they have to be, like, encoded or some shit, or what? Because I've seen, you know, like, ads where those are supposed to work with any movie and shit.
Well, my girlfriend actually stole a pair of those real ones from, I don't know what movie it was.
The electronic ones, or what?
No, I don't know what they are. They're black. They're, like, they have black.
Oh, the ones that came in the theater? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, she managed to swipe them. I don't know what that even... I guess it wouldn't make a difference watching it on, like, your high-definition television or anything, I guess. Not.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Scat Boy knows a little about that.
Yeah, he would probably be the one to ask about that stuff. But, man, we appreciate you calling in. Is there anything else you want to talk about on here?
No. I know. Go to YouTube and look up Nickel Art. He makes great videos. And
that's Nickel RT.
Or Nickel RT, Nickel Art. It's all good. But, okay, guys, I'll let you go, and try not to do too many steroids, bros.
Catch you'll lose all your hair, brother. See you, man.
See ya.
Bye.
Nickel ERT. I've noticed
Nickelert. See, that's what I don't get about his name. It says Nickelert. Everybody says it like that, but it's like Nick Lert on the way it's spelled. Or it's Nickel RT. So.
That reminds me, though, of Uncle Bill and the Piz Owl thing. He keeps calling him Piz
Owl. I get Piz Owl. That's like a gangster thing, like his homie or whatever. It's just like Powell, but Piz Owl.
He calls him Piz Owl.
Yep.
Every fucking time, and the guy actually says his name in every video, what his name is. So we got another call here. Let's see who this is. Hello, you're on Dead Pit Radio. Who's this?
Hey, what's up? This is Bad 32. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Not too bad.
So it's pretty much. Pretty much open topic, like we were saying. We're talking about anything you want to, so I'm sure there's...
Right on, right on. Well, yeah, I mean, I had listened to your interview with Tom DeSimone, I think it was from last year, and I got around to checking out a couple of his movies. I checked out Hell Night and Reform School Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Man, me and my girlfriend really liked Reform School Girls. I mean, that movie had every...
That
movie's
so awesome. I grew up with that movie. That, I think I was 12 jerking off to that film.
Yeah, that's what my girlfriend's like, holy shit. My girl's like, holy shit, I've seen every size tit in that entire movie. I was like, yeah, I mean, eye of a great director can pull that off. So I don't know why Tom DeSimone would have had a problem with doing Savage Streets with that movie. I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah, I didn't get that either. I know he said that movie went too far.
Yeah, like how can anything be more exploitive than Reform School? I mean, it had everything, you know, in it.
Well, it's almost like he was a porn director as well, you know. So
yeah, I mean, he came from the same background as Danny Simon. I mean, listening to like stuff about both those guys, I see these guys cross paths quite a few times in the industry, and it's like, you know, why would you one not do? I mean, I know he didn't want to do Friday Five either, right? I mean, it's the same damn thing, you know.
Yeah, I have no clue. I mean, that is one thing I sort of rolled my eyes at that because of the stuff that he'd done in the past, you know, and he was like, well,
yeah,
you know, it's
like he was above it or something. I mean, I really enjoyed that interview and everything and felt it was really informative, but yeah, I mean, come on.
I never seen Savage Streets, to be honest. Am I missing something? Is there like a shocking scene or anything where he went too far, basically? I don't know.
Well, I've never seen, I take it that it's like the original script was a lot more extreme, but I mean, Danny Simon even said that it was like too off the wall. It sounded like it was really hokey, kind of corny, like really.
That's so fucking ironic coming from him. That's like Lloyd Kaufman or Charles Band saying that shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
right.
That film's still goofy for me. There's too many dolls. I'm turning it down.
There's some over-the-top stuff in Savage Streets, but there's nothing like, maybe the rape scene is the only thing.
Yeah, but that's nothing compared to, like, I mean, Butterballs. Probably the craziest rape scene I ever seen was, like, in I Spit on Your Grave, where it's, like, 20 minutes, half hour gang raping that chick. I mean, there's nothing. That was tame. You know, there was nothing there. Even what they said about kicks to the head, come on, give me a fucking break. A kick to the head? You could put 10 kicks to her head and it wouldn't have been, you know, any worse than other rape scenes I've seen, so.
Right. Yeah, I mean, even I think that something he might have talked about, I don't know if it was actually in the interview, but when we talked to him, was the scene where they throw one of the girls onto the, like, overpass or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's just, to me, I thought that was hokey as hell, but it was, I didn't take that scene seriously at all. It just looked hilarious to me. I mean, I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of hokey stuff in that movie, but the interesting thing about that, like, overpass there is that I don't know if you listen to the commentary on Savage Streets, but I think it was Michael Felcher said something about Tom DeSimone's film Angel being filmed right there, too, so I mean, these guys film movies in, I mean, a lot of the same locations, you know, so, I mean, pretty much it looks like they both came from the same background and obviously aren't doing anything anymore, so.
Yeah.
Wasn't Reform?
I'd like to see Danny.
What's that?
I'd like to see Danny Simon do something. I mean, lately
oh, yeah.
It seems
he's
like.
He's that coke guy from Part 5, huh? His brother, right?
Oh.
A little coke guy from Friday the 13th.
Ooh, Bob DeSimone?
Yeah. That's that dude's brother.
The thing about Danny Steinman is, though, I mean, the guy is really up there in age. I don't know if he would ever. I think we asked him if he would be interested in doing something else, doing another movie.
I've just recently reading stuff online. I don't even think it's that. I don't think it's the age. I think he just kind of says that. I really think it's because he's gotten fucked over so many times after Friday Five. He had like three different films he was supposed to do. I mean, it just sounds like the guy is just tired of trying, you know. I think if someone came along with a deal or something, I'm sure he would jump on it. I could guarantee that.
Who knows? I mean, I would definitely love to see some more stuff from him. I mean, to me,
yeah.
I think he's got a couple more films than him. I mean, the guy doesn't have that many films under his belt as it is. I mean, he should try at least a couple more. I mean, that's what he's good at.
Well, another guy too. We were talking about with Michael Felcher is Fred Decker, man. I mean, why can't?
Yeah, I mean, RoboCop 3 is your last film. I mean, that guy's still. I mean, he's not even close to Danny Simon's age. He's definitely got plenty more films than him.
Oh yeah, I'd say he's still in his 40s or maybe early 50s. I mean, he's definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's maybe everybody thought these movies sucked back then when they came out, because they probably did. I mean, to the majority of people. I mean. But, you know, they've gained a cult following, like how we've all seen them or whatever, you know, and heard of them over the years, same thing. And maybe, you know what I'm saying? Maybe they're...
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it should work well in an underground environment, you know. I don't think that these guys would work well in a mainstream environment. I think that you gave these guys, you know, $500,000, I think they could go off and do something awesome with it, honestly, even in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Felcher was saying maybe a direct-to-DVD sequel for Night of the Creeps or something would be something possible down the line. I think stuff like that, I mean, if you're going to use, because they use...
As long as, you know, as long as it's not filled with cameos, you know, because that's what it seems like these days, if they're going to do something like that, it's like, oh, just fill it with cameos of the, you know, the original cast. It's like, don't overshadow the main plot and, you know, your new cast, you know?
Right. I agree. But, man, we appreciate you calling in. And
thanks for taking the time out. I had a hell of a time getting in. It sounds like you're kind of busy tonight, but I know you guys didn't have a show last week, and I really enjoyed that commentary as well. I really appreciate you guys putting that up.
Cool, no problem. And, I mean, I'm just glad somebody got to hear it because we were thinking when we were doing it, you know, it was going to be, oh, shit, man, this is going to be everywhere when we do this, so...
Well, it's a damn shame it wasn't, and honestly, I tell you honestly, I did buy part 5 for the Danny Simon interview, or the commentary, and of course for the featurette on there, but I mean, even if that wasn't on there, I would have bought it just for the commentary with you guys, honestly.
Cool, we appreciate it, and hopefully the Blood Diner thing will work out, you know, Lionsgate won't replace us with whoever on that one, so.
Yeah, maybe, and they can get some of the cast, like Carl Crew, because he sounds like a real funny guy. I mean, he'd be great to do a commentary with, I think, you know.
Oh, no doubt. Maybe they can track down Jacqueline Kong, too. I think she's in the Orient. But,
yeah, you know. That'd be awesome.
I hope she's just a stuck-up bitch when you finally do track her down.
All right, well, you guys have a good one, all right?
You too, man. Take it easy.
All right, take it easy. Bye.
Later.
Now you,
all right, I think I sounded like an idiot there. Tell me if I'm wrong, first of all. Danny Simon directed Part 5, Friday the 13th, right?
Right.
And his brother's in the movie, right?
No, that would be Tom DeSimone's brother was Bob DeSimone.
I got him mixed up. Okay, yeah. I always thought that was the director.
Indeed. And,
just want to clear that up for people who caught that mistake earlier.
Now, you have seen Blood Diner, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I own Blood Diner.
I was just going to make sure, because a lot of people haven't seen the movie. I mean, it is kind of hard to, because I think...
Actually, to be honest with you, I didn't like it at the first time when you guys all hyped it up when I first met you guys. And I was like, all right, I'll get it. Got it off eBay, a bootleg or whatever.
Yeah.
And fucking, I was like, what? I didn't really like it at first, but I watched it again, and holy shit, that shit is, like, hilarious.
I think it's one of those movies, though, that a lot of people don't get. Like, when we had it, we were screening it Friday night. At the Friday Night Film Fest a couple years ago, and a bunch of people just fucking walked out.
The best is when that dude's driving with no fucking hands.
Yeah. Well, we got another call here. We might as well take it. Hello. You're on Dead Pit Radio with the Creepy Kentuckian and Hydroponic. Who's this?
It's the Blair Witch 63, baby.
Hey, Kim. What's up?
Baby. Hey. It's Hydroponic, so he was the lucky one. How you doing, Josh?
I'm a lucky lotto winner. Great. How about yourself?
Hey, it's cool to talk to you, actually.
Yeah, I thought that this would be a different sort of thing to do, you know, because a lot of people, like, email us and want to co-host the show and stuff. And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know how it'll work out. So, I mean, whoever wanted to call in, be the first caller, I guess, the lucky one to call in can co-host. So, I mean, maybe we'll do this at some point again in the future, see how it works out.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. I let the time get away. I was busy. I just got back from Walmart. I was buying DVDs.
Yeah.
I watched Jay's video where he got all those $3 DVDs. And, the only one I found that he got was Christmas in South Park. But, I got Friday the 13th part 3 and part 4. And,
there
will
be
blood, Reservoir Dogs. You know.
The Big Lots. Have you went to a Big Lots yet? Check out.
I go to our Big Lots every once in a while just to, you know, see what they're getting in. And, I hadn't gone lately, but, Tim went for me, not too long ago, and he got me the When a Stranger Calls. I was real tickled about that. Or not When a Stranger Calls. He knows you're alone. Yeah.
I've noticed lately Big Lots has really started to get in, like, they're getting in TV sets now for like $6, and I actually heard Blu-rays. They're starting to get Blu-ray sets in as well for $6. So I haven't seen any of the Blu-rays yet, but
me neither.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, man. Big Lots is insane now, because back in the day, shit, Big Lots just had VHS tapes of like stuff nobody wanted, like the what was it, Listomania or something like that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But lately, I don't know if it's where, it seems like Walmart has really scaled down the $5 bin, like compared to a couple years ago. Like, I don't know if they're offering as many bargains as they once were, you know. I don't know if that has
When you find a current movie in there and you think it's like fucking $5 and somebody just threw it in there and you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Walmart had some $3 movies where when I went today, but they didn't have that many, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the Big Lots, usually. I mean, the one here in Prestonsburg always gets a decent amount of stuff in, but some of them don't. I mean, some of them we go to in Pikeville and Williamson, West Virginia, I guess the closest ones to here. They don't really get nearly as many cool titles in for some reason.
Actually, I've never been to Big Lots until the other day because I just never went, and then you guys are all talking about all the fucking deals you found there, so I strolled into one. And I walked out with like 10 $3 DVDs. They're like, get cash. I got like Slither, The Woods, and some other shit for $3. I'm like, all right.
We got a ton of $3 DVDs at our Big Lots. They just didn't have that many at Walmart. You know, they're just now starting to put some up for
$3. Jay Reel talks about, but it didn't have the other part or whatever. It had one part, but it had a Nightmare and Dreamscapes or something for $6. I contemplated buying that, but I'm like, fuck it, I'll just buy two regular movies.
Yeah, but I've noticed though, like we don't have the Nightmares and Dreamscapes. I would probably get that because with me and TV
shows, that's a pretty good series. If you ever seen it, I watched a couple from there. I read some of the shorts, like the Battleground. That's what it's called. That's a pretty good one on there. I remember seeing that with little toy soldiers come to life and shit. It's pretty good.
Oh really?
Well, I've read all those stories. I haven't seen them. You say they're on DVD?
Yeah, it's probably on that Nightmares and Dreamscapes box set that they have. I've seen it at Big Lots for $6, but...
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to go to Big Lots myself now.
To get at 8 episodes on it or something.
Yeah. I don't know. We were talking about this, though. I don't know what you guys think about this. As far as the prices of DVDs, just, like, I just don't know how much lower they can go, because when DVDs, I remember getting Lost Boys for, like, $10, and, you know, one of those shitty cardboard cases and stuff, and thinking that I got the deal of the century back, you know, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, you know. And now they're going down to $5.
7 years ago, it was a deal, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember buying the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Pioneer one or whatever, I think, with the first one that came out before the black version, you know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Just the black one. And it was like $27, man. I was like, what the fuck? I remember paying like $24 for Texas Chainsaw 3 too at Best Buy. Not to, you know.
Well, I can remember the first two DVDs I bought in the summer of, like, I think it was 99, maybe it's 2000. I got them at Suncoast Video, so you're going to get the highest price possible.
Good selection, but high prices.
Yeah, I think I got the City of Living Dead. It was like $30, I think, and. Carrie was like 25, so that was like the first two I bought. And that was like the norm then. It was almost like Blu-rays are now, or when Blu-rays first came out, you know. It was really expensive.
Oh, yeah. We first got our first DVD player Christmas of 99, and I had Christmas money burning a hole in my pocket, so I went to Blockbuster. It was the only, you know, store open where you could buy DVDs on Christmas Eve, and I wanted my first DVD to be Blair Witch Project, but they didn't have it. So I got Titanic instead. It was like $30.
Titanic.
You can get it for like $7 now, the exact same one I bought.
Yeah, it's funny how things, like, a couple of them at Big Lots recently, like the Right Stuff Special Edition, that thing was like $30 when it first came out, too, and now it's $3.
Yeah, I've seen that. There. God. I was like, I'm going to watch this movie.
But, Kim, we appreciate you always calling in. I think we were talking about the other day, you're going to try to make the Fright Night Film Fest, I believe.
Yeah, actually, me and Dana, the Evil Dead chick's going to travel up there together.
Oh, really?
She PMs me, and we've been PMing back and forth, and we decided to chill.
She's going to be surrounded by pussy.
What?
Well, it turns out she only lives like 30 minutes away from Owensboro, so.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we're going to get together, and we're going to travel there together, and.
If I was 900 miles away, I might try it too. But
you could hitchhike.
That would be awesome. Yeah, hitchhike.
I'd catch a ride with somebody, no problem. You know.
I think Schlags. You live close to the Schlags, right?
Yeah, I live close to Schlags and DJ.
So you guys could do a road trip, rent a panel van, smoke the weed the whole time there, you know, the whole way there.
I already threw that up in the air. I don't think that's a go.
Oh, well, you try.
All right, Kim. Well, we appreciate you calling, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. See you guys later.
See you.
Bye, Kim.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
So that was... I couldn't understand. You said something about pussy.
I said, she's like, I'm riding up there with Evil Dead chick. There, you know what? When I go, CK is going to be surrounded by pussy.
That's wrong.
I know, but everybody knows I'm joking. Or am I?
Yeah, who knows? Only the shadow. Hello! Y'all Dead Pit Radio with Sonny Landham. And Hydroponic, who's this?
Yeah, what's up? What it is. What it is. This is the Runk.
Hey, Runk.
Uh-oh. The Runkster.
Who's this?
I'm Runk Russell, and you're some other dude. Who probably licks his grandma's vagina.
Is this Hydra?
Yeah, what's going on?
Who is that?
Hydroponic, nigga.
Is that how we're talking, motherfucker?
Motherfucker? Shit, it is what it is, bitch.
Man, you know what I mean? My brother's sleeping right here. I'm about to put a motherfucking 38 Magnum in his mouth and blow his fucking noodles all over the place, kid.
Psych, nah.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Sounds like I'm in Harlem.
Yeah. I'm in Harlem. Yeah, I'm stealing your rims off your Volkswagen. It's like vacation.
Right.
So what's going on?
What's
going on, Runk?
Are you sober, Runkster?
No, I'm drinking a whole bunch of Mountain Dew.
Fucker. Got a caffeine jag going. I'm on my fourth beer.
Yeah, I'd go buy a beer if I had a goddamn job, but I'm having the time of my life and my credit card. It's wonderful.
I hear you.
No, but is there any horror talk going on?
Yeah, well, we're trying to. If you
guys,
how
we talking horror? We're talking bitches and hoes.
We need to drop the urban vernacular first.
Yeah, 40 and quarter O's.
Quarter hoes. We're slanging that yayo.
I'm about to watch that on lockdown.
What was that?
CK, do you deal with Charles Band?
Do we deal with it? Well, we did at one time, but after we reviewed a couple of those movies, they didn't really appreciate what we had to say, so they won't send us anything anymore. So
I don't know, because I watched Evil Bong. I liked it. And, you know, I mean, no one's going to fucking sit and say that those movies are, like, genuine classics, but, I mean, there's something you can have fun with. They should always, companies like that should just take a chance every time. Eventually, like, you might find something humorous to start to get the movies, you know what I mean?
Well, some of the...
I'm about to watch Evil Bong, too.
Some of the Full Moon stuff isn't too bad. I know I like a few of the Puppet Master movies. Definitely not the first one. We tried to watch the first one again not too long ago. Man, that movie just
sucks. Yeah, the first
one's
pretty boring.
Yeah.
You're talking about the one that's
much better.
The one from like the 80s?
Yeah, the original one where there's really not any puppets in the movie until maybe the last 20 minutes or something.
Yeah, like if I I was saying to Adam Beck, I was like, if I'm going to like anything like that, I'm going to like the goofy movies with dolls. I'm not going to like a serious one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about Full Moon now. I mean, I wasn't too big on Evil Bong. It just seems like the movies now are just so low budget. Like, I think they shot that entire movie in, like, one room or something, it seemed like.
Yeah. What I was surprised to hear is that headset was 35 millimeters.
That was in 35 millimeter.
Yeah, I was like, why did it have that clean video look? It didn't look like a trauma movie, but those are 35 millimeter.
Nice.
Yeah, I have no idea why he would shoot something like that in 35 millimeter. That's insane.
I think he always does.
Yeah, because especially the visual effects, it all looked like, you know, kind of like Final Cut Pro type, you know, visual effects. But I don't know. I definitely
sure
enjoyed it for what it was.
35.
What was
What'd
that?
I said I definitely, like, I just think that Ed was dead on when he said it had, like, the shitty National Lampoon movies had that kind of feel, like those direct-to-video ones. And then if you throw a horror movie into that, I just think it makes for some, you know, all right, decent entertainment.
Yeah, I still haven't seen Ginger Dead Man 2, The Passion of the Crust or something like that.
Have you seen that, Hydro?
Nope, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen a lot of full moons, even though I get wholesale from them because my auntie works for them. But
have you watched anything lately?
From Full Moon or just in general?
What'd you say?
Did I watch anything from Full Moon or just in general?
Yeah, anything in general, like you watch.
I watched. I bought a movie off eBay from the 80s, I remember, that ain't on DVD in the USA, so I had to buy it on eBay. It's a PAL Region Zero disc, but my shit will play it, so. It's called Breaking All the Rules. It's a classic 80s movie about the last day of summer and these two guys and two chicks and whatever at an amusement park, and kind of hilarity ensues and fucking. There's a stolen diamond and shit. It's pretty fucking. If you haven't seen it, I guarantee you'll love it. If you love 80s movies and you watch it for the first time. Watching it again, I was like, fuck, no wonder I love this movie. It has so much tits in it and ass. I'm like 12 on HBO. I go, yeah, this fucking rules.
It was another
one. But it holds up today. I just checked it out. I haven't seen it for 20 years.
Another one of those movies that you jacked off at when you were 12 or something.
Oh, hell yeah. That and Reform School Girls and whatever. Whatever you can find, any little tits.
I didn't jack off until I was 14.
I don't know how many goddamn Emmanuel movies I watched on Skinamax back in the day. Fuck.
I think the big movies for me were the Night Eyes movies or something like that. The ones with Shannon Tweed in it.
That was the time after my time of that shit. But yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, by the time I started whacking it, I was, like, just right into the Nubian princess videos, you know, just, like, ghetto booties and all
that.
That's
what sucks about youth of today. I mean, they got porn readily accessible to all ages at any time on the Internet. I mean, we had to go around and, like, I knew a buddy that worked at a video store. His family owned it and shit, so he went to my school. So I was like, fuck, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the
Asian dude in New York me up. We'd let me rent porn when I was 15. I'm like, sweet.
The cool thing about porn now is just the portability of it all. Because if you really wanted to, you could load porn on your iPhone and go in the, you know, public bathroom and jack off somewhere. Not that.
Oh, yeah.
I've never really done that, but I mean, you could.
Oh, you haven't? That's great times, CK. Yeah, let me tell you.
Okay.
I sit on my little iPod.
Burger King,
my little iPod.
The fucking Wendy's, Taco Bell, wherever, you know.
Give Taco Bell another special sauce, I guess.
A little pit stop, if you will. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So what about you, Runk? Have you been checking out anything of note lately in the horror world?
For me?
Yeah.
Basically, Evil Bong. I'm just going through this thing because nothing decent's coming out. I'm trying to get The Unborn on Netflix. Because basically I'm just into all the Charles Band stuff right now. Then I'm going to watch Evil Bong 2 and then the Ginger Dead Man movies because there's just not much coming out. I think it's the slowest part of the year for me personally.
Yeah, they're working on a new Puppet Master. I think it's over shooting, but...
Puppet Master in 3D.
Yeah. Is it in 3D?
Hell, I don't know. It probably is. It seems like everything's in 3D now.
Yeah, that's going to be the new trend.
Band in 3D movie.
But, Runk, man, we appreciate you calling in. I guess you'll be the final caller of the night. But it's always good to talk to you and keep up all the entertaining videos on YouTube. I've been checking them all out.
Thank you very much. And if you ever want to go battle on a wrestling promo, I'm with it.
Well, we can do that. We could do that at some point. Who knows? Maybe we could even have a fucking match at the Friday Night Film Fest. It could all lead up to...
I'll give you a fucking Hurricane Rana off the top rope. Because I'm Hydroponic, and you're some other guy.
No, I'm Bad News Brown. I'm black, and I'm dead.
Dude, keep up the goofy videos.
Did you ever wonder, though, if Bad News Brown was buried with his sewer rats, and they were, like, eating away at his flesh after, like, you know?
I heard he was buried with Adrian Adonis, actually.
God. Yeah. Well, we gotta love dead people. It's happening all the time now, so might as well make fun of them.
That's true. You know.
By the time death goes to Hollywood, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You guys have a good one, man.
All right, man. You take it easy.
Time
later.
All right, see.
Peace out, Audi 5000G.
All right, man. Well, I thank you for joining us for the, I guess, the co-host gig.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And it was fun. I think we took about 4 calls, and it's almost 9 o'clock. Well, about 20 minutes, still 9. And we're going to finish this show up. Uncle Bill's just now finishing his massive shit that he was taking this week during the call-in portion. But
he had 40 pounds of impacted fecal matter in his colon.
Yeah, and a lot of it looked like, you know, a Rocky Road ice cream. It had some semen in it or something, is what he was telling me.
I think he shit out in the sewer, and that's what you see on that fucking YouTube video with the sewer monster.
Yeah.
Pulsating shit ball or whatever it is.
It looks like a pulsating walnut or something. I don't know.
Did you see that video?
Yeah, it's sick, wasn't it?
Actually, it's a thing of worms. It's like a cluster of worms, and they fucking surround themselves with slime.
That's what I heard,
because...
A couple of them must have
a worm cyst.
Yeah, because they didn't have anything to burrow into in the sewer.
That shit looked like it was CGI for a minute, though. The way the slime was moving and shit, I'm like, what the fuck?
Definitely. I'm sure there'll be some creatures, you know, in a movie looking like that soon, no doubt, because it is pretty creepy. But man, we appreciate it again, and we'll talk to you again sometime down the line, I'm sure. But we're going to take a break, and we will be back with DVD review, baby. Here on Dead Pit.
.com.
Hello, this is Sonny Landman.
And I'm Ed Ramsey.
Telling you to check out DeadPit.com, Saturday Night Man.
Yeah, a lot of people recognize me from Deadly Free. But you're going to recognize CK and Uncle Bill from DeadPit.com.
Every week, talk to the Uncle Bill and the Creepy Kentuckian live over at Blog TV.
You said go check it out now!
DeadPit.com, Saturday Night Man. It'll make you want to chew almighty.
Hell yeah!
So welcome back here on Dead Pit from that lovely call-in portion. I thought that was amazing, though. I mean, I could hear it from in there in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, hydroponic, being on the show and such.
Well, we have monitors. That's one thing that people don't understand about Casa La Pit is we do have monitors going throughout the entire abode of what goes on, you know, on the show. So you're usually listening to it from the throne, I like to call it, in there, where I take some of my most exquisite dumps.
The epic dumps.
One thing, though, that we don't talk about on Dead Pit that we probably should since we're talking about taking dumps. We all have our favorite thing we like to do when we take a dump, right? Besides taking a dump, you know. What would be yours, Uncle Bill?
I'm not sure exactly what you mean by favorite thing while I'm taking a dump. You mean like show tunes or something? One of my...
What do you do to help pass the time
as you
pass your bowels?
I always keep like a massive magazine collection in any bathroom that I go into. And it's normally Whorehound, old Rue Morgues and some of the like smaller review books, like Tim Gross's book is really good for taking a shit. And as we mentioned before,
I don't think he's bullshitting, because I remember you bringing a magazine back for some reason we was talking about during the show, and it looked like you was actually wiping your ass with the magazine.
Yeah, it gets water on it from the sink and stuff. So yeah,
from the sink, or you actually piss on
it? I just piss all over the magazines. Oh, I can't control this.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually got my item here, believe it or not. I was planning it in here today. I've been doing this for the past 3 or 4 years, actually, off and on, playing a Game Boy as a shit. And it helps it helps me along really well. And I've got Tetris in there right now, so you can probably hear it.
I don't know if you realize this, but, I mean, I think most people will pretty much do anything to not have to sit and take a shit without anything to do.
That's true. That's the most boring thing. Like, I can understand why people write on walls when they shit and stuff like that, just to pass the time.
Like, if there's nothing in a bathroom, like if I'm in a public bathroom, I'll read, like, the back of fucking, like, Clorox bottles and shit if I don't have anything else to read. Yeah. Like, whatever's around.
That's true. But big thanks again to Hydroponic, of course, for joining me. It was all random, folks, and who knows? I mean, we may do it again. I think we had some small technical issues, because all the co-hosts before were using Skype, which I think works a lot better than rather having like two people on phones, because there's a little bit more of a delay I've noticed just from this past call-in. So if we do it again, we'll try to fix things a little bit more. Maybe have the co-host keep trying to call in with Skype instead of, you know, their phones. So
yeah,
that's about the only thing I can think of. Other than that, it went off without a hitch.
Was it swimmingly? Did it go all swimming? There's one question I have, though, since you mentioned, you know, that Changeling called in. Changeling, Nick Alert, whatever the name is. What the fuck is that song that's at the beginning of all your videos? I want to know what that is, because that song's killer.
Is it a Nickelback song? Because he is from Canada.
I don't think it's not a Rush song either, I don't think. It almost sounds like Huey Lewis and the News, if I didn't know any better, but I don't know if it is or not. I've never heard it before.
Yeah, speaking of YouTube, though, did you hear about all the censorship going on? They got like a
They started putting filter. Stars and stuff, yeah. Where if you say, like, if you type in the word ass, it'll come up three little asterisk star things. So anything you put in, I was noticing that on videos. I was like, are people really becoming that much pussy that they're starting to, like, put these little stars in? But no, it's actually a new feature on YouTube.
The odd thing is, though, it doesn't work on all the videos. Like, I was looking at some of our old stuff. Like, is it not working on the older videos, or is they just doing it from certain point on or something?
I don't know.
Anyway, they were talking about, like, remember the people on the message board were talking about, remember the glory days when the internet was, you know, you could do whatever. Nobody gave a fuck. You know, you could use any type of music you wanted to and stuff like that. And, yeah, it really pisses me off, because I can remember just a year or two ago, we were using songs. We didn't even think twice about using other people's songs. Nobody gave a fuck. And, like, you can't even use clips in certain videos of songs, or you'll get, like, they've done that with a few of our videos now, and it's just bullshit. Like, and even some of them have the artist name popped up there. You can buy this from iTunes.
Oh, good. No, to me, the only thing that putting a song like that in a video does, like, for instance, with the song that, whatever song it is that Nick Lurch's using, or Changeling, or whatever, is that it makes me want to know what the song is, which seems to me that would be helpful to the artist, because if I'm looking for the song, then obviously I'm going to be looking for the artist and possibly, you know, buying the shit if it's good enough.
I mean, seriously, does anybody actually think that it's costing them money if a certain artist song is putting, like, not even the full song, like 15 seconds of song? Ah! It's costing me! How dare they do that!
Lars does. Lars thinks that's what's happening.
He's like, I could be using that money to buy me another fucking pool cue or something, you know, whatever. Nicolette, that son of a bitch, how dare he use my song?
Lars British.
Well, he's like
Scottish. He is Danish. Yeah.
He's got some accent going, I know that.
Fucking douche.
Anyway, though, we do have the reviews to get to, but have some announcements we definitely need to make, and some thanks out there, because I was given a very special visit earlier this week, and I didn't know it was going to happen, really. I knew that this lady was working on this little bust for us, like a little, sort of like a, I know Kevin Tenney said it looked like a bobblehead a little bit. It looks like Celebrity Deathmatch versions of us. But it's actually a little bust that this lady made who lives around this area who, there's actually a little bit of a history with us because they were the couple that we saw at the flea market back when Kelly Marcotte, in 2007, I think, was shooting the first, you know, scenes from End of the Pit. The upcoming, I hope it's still upcoming, documentary about Dead Pit. So we met them there, and evidently, like, we gave them a business card and stuff like that, and they've started to listen to the show and become fans of the show and decided they would do a little mini bust of us and delivered it to us, the Dead Pit Studios, this past week. And I just wanted to definitely thank Gina, and she was the artist, and Jamie, her husband, and their son Spartacus, for dropping the little statue by.
His name is Spartacus.
That's right. That kid's going to grow up to be a badass, Uncle Bill.
He better. The thing about it is, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work that went into that, and like it's not like either one of us asked about having that done or anything. That's just something that they wanted to do for us, which,
right.
I mean, that's amazing to me. I really do appreciate that. I wish I'd been around for the big delivery of it.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, to say the least, and I took some photos and actually got them up on the Facebook page. And, you know, I've noticed this more and more. I mean, I know that Dead Pit, as far as the MySpace, I don't know how you feel about this, but, I mean, it seems like to me that MySpace is really, really losing it.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the way I felt that way for probably the last 2 or 3 months really heavily, because Facebook, for some reason, whatever reason, has really taken over the niche.
Well, I think
MySpace
at first I didn't get it with Facebook, but since I've got the iPhone and I've got the Facebook application on iPhone. It's really something that you can fucking update anywhere, you know, and it's really interactive, and no, you really can't, you know, customize the page like you could with MySpace, but I think that sort of helps, to be honest with you, because a lot of the MySpace shit, people just overdid it with MySpace, and you couldn't even open the goddamn page because there were so many little things that would pop up there.
Well, the thing that sucks about that for me, though, is like I've got like almost 12,000 friends on MySpace, and if I had Facebook, I'd have to start that shit over again. But
yeah. And the thing with Facebook is, too, is you really can't, as far as I know, I mean, we do have a Dead Pit Radio fan page on there, but like you would actually have to start it as your real name, and that's how I have mine, because you can't, they won't let you put fake names in there or anything, which is sort of shitty.
Anyway,
you can see the photos on Facebook of that, and we may have like some video, we may make a little video about that. We need to talk about the poster videos, because we actually recorded like the first three were recorded all at once, and that's why we haven't had any more up. You know, we haven't had any time to record them yet, but hopefully sometime this weekend we'll have time to record the rest of them. There's still a few more posters. I don't know where the fuck they're at, to be honest with you. And I think our big two posters, we were going to wait and show them, you know, at some point down the line, because we don't really want to fuck with them.
I don't even like getting that out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really even like touching it. I'm always afraid something's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about maybe getting custom framed or something like that, so we don't have to, you know, worry about damaging them anymore, because those posters of that age are really, really brittle. I mean, a lot of them are.
I see. We're talking about, like, you know, 74 and 78, so, shit, over 30 years old on both of them.
Yeah. And another thing, though, we wanted to, but as far as the poster stuff, hopefully we'll get some of that stuff started again by at least this time next week, at the very least. I mean, we'll have some more poster videos to get to because, shit, we're probably going to have 7 or 8 of these damn things total, you know, before we get it all over and done with. Last thing, though, I definitely want to thank everybody for checking out the Friday the 13th 5 fan commentary from last week. And we are breaking fucking records, Uncle Bill, with these fucking fan commentaries. Maybe it was because we gave that one away and people knew how awesome, you know, it was, or I don't know, or they thought it was awesome. Because we sold, as far as a weekly record goes, we broke it last week as far as the new Return of Living Dead and people buying all the old commentaries as well. Shit, we really appreciate that.
How many did we actually end up selling?
I have no fucking clue. All I know is we broke a record.
Wow. Yeah, that is pretty amazing, and thanks to everybody
that's
buying.
We sold about 7 million.
Golly.
Yeah, so we're millionaires now.
That's just barely broke the record, though, that we had from last time.
Well, we're millionaires. No, but we did easily outsell, like, any other week. I mean, I don't have the exact number, but if you haven't checked out any of the commentaries yet, they're only $2.99 a piece, aside from the ones that are really long, and those are $3.99. Shit, that's too high. $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a way you can help support the site. We give you this free. This is going to be well over a 2.5-hour show when this is all over with. Free for you guys.
Support us.
Yeah, go buy a t-shirt if you don't like buying digital shit. Just send us a donation. We'll take money for nothing. You know how we are.
Get your money for nothing and your chicks for free.
Woo, woo, baby.
Is he saying checks or chicks? Is he saying chicks for free? Get your money for nothing and your chicks for free?
I have no clue.
Money and your chicks. Checks or chicks? He's British, so he fucks it up.
Oh my God. Oh.
Anyway, we need to actually review some DVDs at some point on this shit.
We probably should. So, we're talking about the Friday the 13th deluxe editions of Part 5 and Part 6. So, I guess it'd make the most sense to start with Part 6, wouldn't it, Uncle Bill?
Yeah. If you're going in by terms of, you know, how good they are, that would make the most sense. Anyway. But actually, as far as these DVDs go, though, Part 6 DVD... it actually has a lot better special features than the Part 5 one.
Yeah. But we will talk about, of course, both of our favorite sequels, Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning.
So, what's different, first of all, about this Part 5 DVD? I think we've talked about the movie Part 5 enough. So, what's different about this DVD than the first Paramount DVD? The big difference to me is the commentary, which is... there's actually a Danny Steinman commentary on here. Shavar Ross sets in. John Shepard sets in. And Michael Slipcase Felsher, via phone from his Palisade in Detroit,
He couldn't sits make it
in.
Out, evidently. I was surprised by this commentary. It was a good commentary from what I heard. I mean, I really just listened to the part where he mentioned us.
Yeah, I listened to up to that part. So I probably listened to about an hour of it or something.
Yeah. I think that mostly, from what I noticed, John Shepard and especially Shavar Ross were really goofing on the movie, which is fine. I mean, the movie is hokey. I don't have a problem with that. It would have been great had Michael Felcher actually been in the studio with those guys. That was where the problem, in my opinion, with the commentary lay, because... I don't know if it's just where I'm a perfectionist like that or what. I just can't listen to something like that. I mean, no offense. I mean, I know it wasn't anybody's fault in particular. I'm sure they wanted Felcher there with them. It's just the difference in the audio and stuff, it just made it really hard to listen to, in my opinion.
Well, I don't even know if it was the audio that made it hard for me to listen to. It's much more the fact that it just kind of took me out of it, knowing that he wasn't there. There's some sort of connection that you need to have when you do something like that. It just isn't the same when you're not there with the people to see their reactions to certain stuff
And I noticed a lot of the times Felcher would get interrupted or he would interrupt someone, you know, unintentionally because he wasn't there, you know.
Yeah.
And that's my big problem. I mean, I was just surprised – you know, I'm sure they did the commentary in Los Angeles, and I know that Felcher has a problem with the with flying in airplanes and shit. So I mean, that was probably the deal as far as why he didn't get out there to that. But Steinman,
yeah,
was great.
That's what I
was amazed at how great he was doing the commentary from what I heard. You know,
he was great in like a Chud commentary sort of way, where yeah. He would joke a lot about different stuff, and he would claim that he did everything on the film, from like the lighting to the
yeah.
any kind of effects or anything.
And what's amazing is, and we were talking about this in the call-in portion. I don't know if it's this week or a couple weeks ago. I have no idea. Steinman, in my opinion, is one of the most underrated filmmakers, you know, that I can think of, because look at all three of his movies. He only, as far as like the genre movies go, he had three. And to me, they were all really memorable and well done, well shot, had memorable characters, kills. The guy just really knew how to make a movie. And I know a lot of people rag on Part 5, but I think, in my opinion, If you took somebody not knowing anything about the series, you know, if they were a horror fan, I don't know how you couldn't. I think the majority of the people would like Part 5 now if they went back and saw it. If you're a fan of just goofy 80s movies with really, you know, I guess you gotta get the humor of the movie too, that a lot of people don't really get. But I think that a lot of the folks, had they not heard about, oh, this is horrible, this isn't really Jason, this isn't Jason in this movie, this is Roy, you know.
Yeah.
You take that away, I think a lot of people would really love this movie. Now,
it's definitely got a different feel than any other Friday the 13th movie, and I've mentioned this a million times, but it's got a very, it looks like all the rest of his films, too. It looks like an exploitation film. It feels that way, too, kind of. Everything he does has a certain tinge of sleaziness to it, and this film is no exception to that. But I like that, though. I like that 80s-style kind of, I don't know, gritty street vibe sort of way that he made films. Mm-hmm. I think that was part of his character, too, being, you know, where he was from and stuff and the way that he made films. And I like somebody to have at least personality that comes through in a film, and I think his personality definitely comes through in this edition. There's been certain films, like, for instance, you take Friday the 13th Part 8, or maybe Jason Goes to Hell, where you don't get that feeling. It seems like there's no personality behind the films. They just go through the paces, especially on Jason Goes to Hell. I don't even know what yeah. the...
Well, I mean, that's what a lot of people don't touch on with this movie. It's always, it's Roy, it's not Jason. That's what anybody ever talks about. They don't talk about the memorable characters you have in this movie. Almost every character that's in this movie is memorable in some form. Hell, we can go through them. You can look at fucking Big, who chops up Joey, the stereotypical fat kid with a candy bar. Who fucking couldn't love that? You
yeah,
gotta love
I don't
that
know.
Shit.
Got Violet. I mean, Violet, to me, is one of the most memorable characters with her little new wave Egyptian dance sequence yeah. shit, and just the way that she looks throughout the film. I mean, that's one of the better characters in that film. And we haven't even gotten into the really great characters in the film, which would be, of course, Junior and Ethel.
Yeah, and Demon, who gets stabbed in the shit box.
You stabbed him in the shit box. You can't do that.
And, of course, Melanie Kinneman, Pam, the leading lady, and, you know, one of the great scenes in it is the white top she has on. You can get a little hint of her boobage once it gets wet. You know, I enjoyed that. I just love almost every character in this movie. And to me, you know, and we talk about movies like Mad Men up there. That's what made Mad Men memorable as well, is you just had some funny fucking characters in it.
Can you believe people were talking shit about Mad Men again on the board? Did you see that?
Buddy fuck people.
I'm telling you, look. Friday the 13th Part 5 and Mad Men are both good films.
Yeah, they're good. Whether or not you all can see it or not,
say
that's
what
your
problem. You will. You can kiss my ass.
Yeah. Formula is why these movies work. It's all formula, the way it's executed. Seriously, besides the fact that it's not really Jason, what is there not to like about this? I've never understood that. I have never, ever got that about part five. Everything else, you've got tons of gore, tons of titties, hilarious characters.
Well, you hear people say, at least I've heard people say, that it's a mean-spirited Friday the 13th film. Like, part six was much more of a dramatic, almost monster film that didn't, you know, that was really kind of comedic in a lot of places, and part four was not, you know. And I will say that I think there's some truth to that. That part five is definitely more, it's just sleazy. That's what I think it is. It's not really mean-spirited. Well, it's just fucking, it's like cocaine to all the rest of the film's pot.
Yeah, but at the same time, it has a lot of lighthearted moments in it as well. It's pretty goddamn hilarious. Like the whole Ethel and Junior sequence and Demon, the whole scene with Demon.
Ooh, baby.
Singing to his girlfriend as he's taking a dump. I don't know how people can take that as super serious. I really don't.
They're not super serial. Let's talk about, though, a couple more features on here. You got the Lost Tales from Camp Blood, which is completely worthless. The Crystal Lake, I don't even want to talk about that. The Crystal Lake Massacres Revisited Part 2. What did you think about the Crystal Lake Massacres Revisited series?
I actually didn't think it was too bad. I thought that this one, of all the ones, was probably the best of them all. Because it's not like they really ripped on Part 5, which I liked. It's really like, you know, if you've not seen the Crystal Lake Massacres Revisited, it's like a true Hollywood story style on, you know, as if the Crystal Lake murders were real, you know.
Almost like a documentary of what would happen, like, after the murders and catching up with people who knew the people from the cast of the movies and stuff.
And the most hilarious scene, in my opinion, in any of these Crystal Lake Massacres Revisited was with Reggie the Reckless's cousins or something like that. I don't know where they found those guys at. Those guys were goddamn hilarious. Now, problem I had the main problem I had with this is, and I don't know if Daniel Ferrans is in that crowd, you've got the snooty horror journalism motherfuckers scattered throughout these documentaries. And that's like, I understand they're probably your friends and all this shit, but come on. Jesus. Tap dancing Christ. I mean, I don't want to see Stacey Lynn Wilson dancing around like she's a go-go dancer or something.
You didn't like the West Coast Elite? They're the newest stable.
Do they actually think people know who the hell that is, though? Like,
we do. I guess they just did it for the benefit of, like, horror nerds like us that know who they are. But do you know Heidi Martin Uzi's in there?
Yeah, Heidi Martin Uzi's in it. Although I don't even know if she's in that crowd that much anymore. I just know that she's into, like, getting fucked by Joe Bob Briggs. That's what she's into.
She's into that.
She's into that. Joe Bob, God! There's a chance Joe Bob's driving will return.
I got to say that I thought it was a lot better idea than the Lost Tales from Camp Blood. Like, I would much rather see something like that than just something completely irrelevant like the Lost Tales.
Yeah, Lost Tales from Camp Blood didn't have anything to do with Friday the 13th.
No.
It was just some really bad, like, short film series or something.
I'd like to smack whoever came up with that idea. But also, it's got a documentary, The Making of... this is the one that really got me, because it's only, like, what, 9 or 10 minute long Making of documentary?
They only had, like, how many, like, 3 or 4 people that was actually related to the movie in it. Like, you had Danny Steinman, you had Shavar Ross, you had Tiffany Helm, who else? That's it from the movie. And, well, Felcher was in it.
Yeah, Michael Felcher.
But, I mean, as far as people actually in the movie.
Was Dick Wine in there?
Yeah, Dick Wine was in there. There he goes. And Tom Morg was in it, yeah.
So, but here's the thing. Like, I love this movie and everything, but if you listen to our show, then you know more about what went on in this movie than you would by watching that documentary. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, if you are a fan of the movie and you saw that documentary, you would be upset because it's really like the most surface level shit you can get into.
Yeah, and it's really sad because I just don't see them ever doing any more than they've done with this. And this is definitely the bastard child, at least up until like, well, I don't think they're doing much with 7 and 8, right? So they probably are going to do a little bit more, or have done a little bit more with this one than they're going to do with those. But of the original Paramount 8, this has always been the bastard child of the franchise. So I can't really say I'm surprised by this. I thought the making of, for what it was entertaining, and I would love to see more of it. But what are you going to do? I mean, there's not a lot on this disc. I don't think you should call it a deluxe edition with what it's got on it, to be honest with you. Because of all the deluxe editions, yeah, I mean, this one doesn't have hardly anything on it.
Yeah. To me, this is out of the new batch of like 4, 5, and 6. This is the one that has the least amount of stuff on it, and the stuff that's on there is really bare bones, and for me that's kind of disappointing because it's my favorite out of those three movies anyway. So
yeah, and it's even more disappointing because we did a commentary and you guys heard it last week.
Gotta bring this up again.
I'm gonna forever bring this up because we worked hard on that commentary.
Yeah,
and it was actually 2 nights worth of doing stuff. Thinking, yeah, I mean, this is fucking awesome. This is like a dream come true. We're going to get to do this.
No.
It didn't happen. Not only did that not happen, there was another couple of people, Uncle Creepy and Stacey Lynn Wilson, who did a commentary as well, and all of their hard work, they didn't give a fuck about that either. So that's bullshit. You ain't going to have hardly anything on this disc. And you're telling me they couldn't fit... both those commentaries could have been on here. Easy. It wouldn't have taken up any more space on the disc, you know? So, that's Paramount for you. Fuck you. Seriously.
So, let's take a look at...
I'm really not that mad.
No, you're not. I mean, we've kind of gotten over it by now.
Yeah, I mean... But the thing is, it's not like that would have been impossible for them to do that. There's hardly anything on that disc. That's all I'm saying.
I would say this is probably as good of a treatment as this DVD will ever get, but I really don't believe that because I think eventually they're going to milk this franchise for everything that it's worth, and I think they'll put all this stuff back out at some point in time in a box set or something and probably have a lot more shit in that.
Yeah, I mean, they might release it again. I just don't see it having any more extras on it, to be honest with you. But who knows?
Yeah.
So the next one, of course, is Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives.
We don't talk about this movie that much. And I think it's because, like, for all the people that talk about Friday the 13th, Part 5 being, you know, the one that they can't stand the most, to me, I mean, it's not that I can't stand this film or anything, but to me it's just one that I don't go back and watch it a lot. It's not one that I immediately think of and want to see. And I couldn't really explain to you why, other than the fact that it is a much more, it's kind of like a cinematic Friday the 13th movie. And a lot of people like that, but to me, Friday the 13th movies aren't supposed to be like epic kind of glossy types of movies. And that's what this comes off as to
me. Yeah, I mean, this movie was the very first Friday the 13th movie I saw as a young kid. I was like 7 years old. And I loved it then, and I still like it. I mean, I like all the, you know, people find this hard to believe. I even like Part 8. I like all the original Paramount movies. But this one in particular is way more over the top, and it's not even over the top. Like, it's almost the type of humor that a retard would laugh at, to be honest with you. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I don't know about a retard. It's not like slapstick humor either.
Well, it's just... Some of it is. I mean, when he throws the guy's head into the tree and in a smiley face, and then he just chops all three of their heads off. And, I mean, it's just, it's way out there. I mean, it's not like any type of sophisticated humor going on in this movie. It's more
I thought it was very highbrow.
Did you?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I like the movie for what it is, but as far as interesting characters go, this is when the movie really, really went, like the series in general really went downhill when it comes to interesting characters. Because, in my opinion, a lot of the characters in 6, 7, and 8, I get them all confused. I don't even remember which ones were in which movie because they're just so generic, you know.
Yeah, if you asked me to name off, like, the characters for part, especially part 6, I would have absolutely no idea. Like, I know Tommy Jarvis is in it, and but after that...
I think John Travolta's nephew's in it.
Yeah, it gets real fuzzy. Like,
there's just not a whole lot of memorable characters in this movie. And people, I think, they don't really think about that as far as like how important character development, characters in general, are, especially in slasher movies. I mean, to me, that's what makes a great slasher movie, is if you have some fun, interesting characters, even if they're corny and cheesy as hell, you know, at least you can remember them and like they have lines you can quote, things like that. And this, like, I don't even remember any of the characters' names in this movie aside from Tommy Jarvis. I really don't, you know.
Yeah.
I think maybe the lead's name was, like, Jesse or Jessica or something like that.
Jesse!
Jesse! Where's Jason at, Damien?
Anyway, since we don't talk about this one this much, this is the one, of course, where Tommy Jarvis tries to dig Jason up and make sure he's dead and piss on his corpse and whatever, and ends up unwittingly reanimating him through a bolt of lightning via, like, Frankenstein. And he comes back and terrorizes this new camp. I think it's Forest Green or something like that.
Yeah, they renamed the camp.
Yeah, now it's got little kids or the campers or whatever, really little kids.
That is one interesting thing about it, is it actually does have kids in it. Like, of all the Friday the 13th movies, all of them were held at summer camp, but none of them had any real kids in it aside from this movie. That's sort of interesting if you think about it. So, yeah, I mean, Jason pretty much goes around hacking and slashing through the film, and then towards the end, I think Tommy Jarvis, you know, leads him to the lake. Come in, Jason, you pussy! Then he, like, throws a big rope around him. And
probably one of the least memorable endings of a Friday the 13th movie that I can think of, really. But let's talk about the good points about it. First of all, the Alice Cooper song is awesome. Second of all, it does have some good, a couple of really good death scenes in it that I can remember. The girl getting her head shoved through the RV mirror is one I always remember. The sheriff getting bent over backwards is a really good one. It's got a cool looking Jason in it. It's not as cool as the one in part 7, but it's definitely a step up.
Overall, I like the look of the movie, especially the intro when Jason actually comes back to life and he stands up and the maggots and all that shit fall to his feet. I love the look of it, the way it was shot. The look of Jason was sort of cool. Thankfully, you didn't see a whole lot of his actual face because it looked horrible. The makeup effects did and stuff. But, I mean, it's cool to see. This is the debut of Slug Dick Jason, is what we've always said on the show. But, I mean, it's a fun. I don't hate the movie or anything. I like the movie. It's just, of the original Paramounts, it's definitely not one of my favorites. You know, I like a lot of the movies ahead of this one. I'll just say that. But it's a fun movie. You know, everyone's seen it, so we can really talk about any aspect of it without hopefully spoiling it for anybody. If you guys haven't seen Friday the 13th, you know, any of the original Friday the 13th, y'all suck.
Yeah. So what does this DVD have on it that's any different than the other DVDs? First of all, you got the commentary by director Tom McLaughlin, which I think was already on the special features of the original Paramount disc anyway. Lost Tales from Camp Blood Part 6. No!
I ain't gonna watch that shit!
The Crystal Lake Massacre Revisited Part 3, which I did not watch this one. Did you watch the...
No.
Okay, good. Jason Lives, The Making of Friday the 13th Part 6. This is a little bit longer documentary, about 5 minutes longer maybe.
Yeah.
But then again, like, I'd already heard all of the stuff that they were talking about in it. So
yeah, and the odd thing about this one is, as far as the cast goes, I don't think they got anybody.
No, they had the director. I know
the cast. Tom Matthews is making a pretty good amount of money, though, as like a carpenter or something in L.A., construction work or something like that. So maybe he couldn't find time off his busy schedule or something. I don't know.
There's another one on here that I thought was pretty interesting, although it was completely not what I thought it would be. It's called Meeting Mr. Voorhees,
right,
which is like it's a segment from the film that they had thought, that McLaughlin had thought about doing, but didn't get around to do, where you actually, the caretaker from the cemetery scene who gets his bottle shoved in his throat.
The caretaker was actually in that, though. We didn't think about
him. Yeah, yeah, he was. Yeah. He is.
I can't believe that guy's still alive.
He is back, and there's like a subplot where Mr. Voorhees actually, he knew Mr. Voorhees, and he was taking care of the stuff around that cemetery for him. So what they did was, they didn't have any of the sequences from the film or anything. They never filmed any of this stuff, or if they did, they lost it. I don't remember which. So they had like an artist.
You know who the artist was?
Yeah, I was going to say. The artist was Crash Cunningham.
Woo.
Who did like the drawings of, you know, like a storyboard out of what happened with this sequence. And then they had the actual actor who played, what was his name in it?
Hell, I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
He was the caretaker. That's all I know.
They had the guy that was played the caretaker do the voiceover of what he was saying, you know, in the scene and stuff. That was interesting, at least. Slash scenes.
Yeah, which were really just extended scenes,
yeah,
of stuff that they had to trim down. An original theatrical teaser trailer.
Overall, though, I thought this one was in line with like Part 4. It wasn't as entertaining as Part 4 as far as the special features go, and nothing as groundbreaking as the stuff that was on Part 4, like the original ending and all that stuff, or the alternate ending in Part 4. But still, it was better than Part 5 as far as special features go.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, the special features on this were pretty cool. I liked the Meeting Mr. Voorhees thing. I thought that was interesting. I was hoping there would be more stuff like that. You know, as far as the extras go, this is definitely the best it's ever, you know, this would be considered a deluxe edition, I suppose, for this movie, because, you know, before, what did you have? Nothing but the commentary, I don't guess.
Yeah. So if you're like a huge Friday 13th Part 6 Jason Lives fan, then you should probably pick this one up. I would say that about Part 4 and Part 6. I don't even know if I'd say that about Part 5. Like, unless you're just a fucking diehard fan of that movie, then I don't see how the special features on that would be helpful. Or would you learn anything?
Yeah, I want to be really honest with you guys, though. If you already own all the Friday the 13th, like if you own the box set from Crystal Lake to Manhattan, of all the four or the three new ones, Part 4 is really the only one that's worth buying for the extras.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too.
I'm not going to bullshit with you guys. I mean, the extras in Part 5 and 6 is nice, but if you already own the movie, it's really not worth another $15 spending on it, in my opinion. Now, they did a good job on this. I mean, I think that the Crystal Lake Massacres thing is fun, although it really doesn't, you know, a lot of fans of the movies probably aren't even going to watch it, but I mean, I thought it was interesting. You know, it was something funny to watch, although I could have done without all the elite LA horror journalists. You know, I don't want to see Ryan Rotten on my fucking TV. I'll just say that.
You leave that guy alone.
Go wipe his ass with a dick. Seriously.
Yeah, so I agree with that too, though. Part 4 is the one that really got me excited because of the just the content of the special features. Like, that was stuff that I really wanted to see and was like, it got me thinking about the movie in different ways. But the stuff on these other discs, it's not much, really. I mean,
yeah, and Part 4 actually had footage that looked great from, like, deleted scenes and stuff like that. You don't have it on these other ones. I don't know if they just don't exist.
Yeah, the footage in Part 6, the slash, it looks like shit.
It looks like something from a video, too.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives. And we'll be talking about more of these deluxe editions here coming up, I'm sure, with Part 7 and 8. And these ones don't even sound halfway deluxe, you know, from what I've heard. So we'll just have to wait and see with that.
I guess that's it then.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
So what do we have planned for the show next week, Uncle Bill?
I don't know. You want to do a round table?
No, we already did a round table.
We can do another round table.
No.
Come on.
No.
Come on.
No.
Come on.
No.
Do we ever really know? We don't ever fucking know what we're going to do.
We never know what we're going to do because we're always off the cuff and off the hook.
We've emailed a bunch of people. Nobody.
We have
nobody wants to do it.
Nobody wants to talk to us. Everybody's mad at us now because we talk shit about that bitch Jamie Dreyfus. Well, she can go fuck herself. Straight the fuck out of here.
Anyway, until next time. I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
And you've been listening to Dead Pit.
.com.